It's time for Twits. This Week in Tech, big show planned for you. Adam Fisher from our Valley of Genius podcast joins Mike Elgin, the gastro nomad, and Jason Snell from Six Colors. There's a lot to talk about, including the Huawei controversy. Is it time to stop buying Chinese hardware? The copyright threat to Google in the EU, Facebook's high-def camera in your house, and the cost of YouTube influencers. It's all coming up next on Twit.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Twit, This Week in Tech, episode 694, recorded Sunday, November 25th, 2018. Reverse superlatives. This Week in Tech is brought to you by Stamps.com. Buy and print real U.S. postage the instant you need it, right from your desk. For our special offer, go to Stamps.com, click on the microphone, and enter Twit. And by Blue Apron. Blue Apron makes cooking fun and easy. Check out this week's menu and get your first three meals free at blueapron.com/twit. And by Slack. Slack is a collaboration hub for work that makes sure the right people in your team are always in the loop and key information is always at their fingertips. Learn more at slack.com. And by Betterment, the investing tool for those who refuse to settle for average investing. Sign up today at betterment.com/twit and get up to 1 year managed free. It's time for Twit This Week in Tech, the show where we cover the week's tech news. Oh, I am excited today because everybody is in-house, and that always makes for a fun conversation. To my right, Jason Snell from SixColors.com and the Incomparable. Hi, Jason.
I was told there would be turkey. What happened?
I didn't even have turkey at Thanksgiving. I had ham.
Oh, all right. Well,
that's kind of boring, but I can go get you ham. Let me tell you, ham goes a long way. I had a 16-pound ham.
I've been told never to accept internet ham.
Yes, you're probably smart. It's great to have you. Welcome.
Good to be here.
Mike Elgin is here, back from his travels. That's right. Our gastronomad at Elgin.com and gastronomad.net. How you doing? Are you home for the holidays?
We are essentially living in Mexico City through the end of the year, but we came back for the holidays, and we're heading back to Mexico City in like a week.
That's
the next experience, gastronomic experience in Mexico City.
Oh, how fun.
Ring in the new year.
Oh, see, I'd like to do New Year's Eve in Mexico City.
It's great. I've done New Year's Eve in Mexico, in Mazatlan, I think, and that was the Mexican style of New Year's Eve is really fantastic, so it should be really great.
Then Morocco in April. Yep. You're back to Prosecco in the spring. Provence
is almost booked solid already, and it's coming up in the
summer. It's a small group, though. I mean, you're not bringing 3,000 people with you. It's about four or five couples.
Provence, we do 10 couples. It's a big house we've got there.
Yeah. How fun. Yeah. Great to have you. And I saved the best for last. Adam Fisher's never been on Twit before, so I want to give him a nice big plug. Adam is the host of our podcast, Valley of Genius, based on his book, Valley of Genius. And I'm thrilled to have you on. Thank you.
I was thinking maybe I was the turkey.
No. Adam is a technology journalist for a long time. You've written for many magazines, including Wired. But this book, Valley of Genius, is so much fun because it's interviews with the people who made Silicon Valley happen. So, and what happened is I interviewed him for Triangulation about the book, and he mentioned, oh, yeah, these are all audio. I have them all. Well, I don't mean all. I have hundreds of hours of interviews with some of the 200 of the top visionaries. I said, that's a podcast. So we made I think it's good. We're in episode 12, I think. We've got many more to come.
It's mining the archive.
Yeah.
Scraping, mining.
You have a large archive. But it's not, I said initially it was on tape. It's not on tape. You didn't bring a little Norelco cassette recorder.
Not tape.
Okay. MP3. Let's see. You know what? I probably should have reviewed the stories of the week before we began the show. I want to start with one, a little controversial.
There's very little happening.
It's the slow time.
Should we share recipes? Is that what this episode's last segment will be?
Okay. I made cornbread stuffing, which I wouldn't recommend.
How do you stuff a ham?
Ham, you don't. So I thought, well, I'm going to make stuffing that isn't going to go inside a bird.
You never put stuffing inside a bird.
No, it's bad.
Give yourself poison.
Yeah, it's bad for you.
It's bad.
But so I made cornbread tastes like cornbread.
Yeah.
And that kind of put me off a little
slash
bit.
Sawdust.
What was I thinking? It had sausage in it. Jimmy Dean Pure Pork, but didn't save it. So anyway, that's my recipe. Don't.
Okay.
So you had a ham with stuffing that had pork in it? This is a lot of...
Yeah.
This is a very porcine meal. That
it was. I also had lasagna with pork in it.
Yeah. I think we need your recipes. You're the guest.
Yeah, exactly.
He's the cook. What did you do for Thanksgiving?
We did two turkeys. We did... my wife doesn't like stuffing at all, so we didn't do stuffing. She does a chanterelle mushroom gravy that's just unbelievable. We did all the stuff, but
yeah,
Amira style. It was really, really good. So I made the rules.
How was your Thanksgiving, Adam?
I didn't get an invite to his Thanksgiving.
Amira
good.
Is the best cook I know. No, She's amazing. You can go there.
Yeah.
And how about you? You had turkey.
Right? I brined a turkey. I made some cornbread dressing, but the Alton Brown technique was very good.
Oh,
it's
I
very
need
much,
to find that.
I'll send you the recipe. Yeah. And made my own cranberry sauce this year.
Oh,
it's pretty good.
Fun.
We did something really strange, and I won't be strange to our Toronto guest here, but we had Canadians join us. They're double dipping. They did the Canadian Thanksgiving,
October,
then they came here for the American Thanksgiving. But they brought a Canadian dish. It was like a meat pie, and they put maple syrup on it.
Oh, God.
Has anybody heard of this? Is this real?
Yeah.
We've been punked.
Yeah. No, Chris is nodding. He says, I know. Yeah, I know that.
Never heard of that.
You put cheese curds on it then?
Wisconsin.
No, Toronto. Actually, I think Montreal's famous for poutine, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Cheese curds with gravy. All right.
And french fries.
I love it. Roland in the chat room says, Leo starts Twit in media race, the best epic poetry in the middle.
That's right. We cut out all that early stuff, whatever.
And then Odysseus said, Washington asks allies to drop Huawei. This is a Wall Street Journal story. And I just really don't know what to think about it. And I thought, what I'll do is I'll ask our esteemed panel. So let me give you the background on this. It actually started in 2012 when Congress told telecommunication companies to be afraid of Huawei, ZTE, and other Chinese telecom companies because they had either investments from or connections to the Chinese military. That's the first we heard it. Then the Department of Commerce echoed it. But now, according to the Wall Street Journal, the U.S. government is reaching out to allies, Germany, Italy, and Japan, about using Huawei equipment. These are countries, friendly countries, where Huawei equipment is widely in use. Huawei, believe it or not, is the number two smartphone manufacturer after Samsung and the number one telecommunications company in the world. And for 5G networks, the future networks for many of these cell companies, Huawei's the choice. It's
founder
the
of Huawei is a former military in China. He's closely allied with the Chinese leadership, and so there's a lot of nervousness about it. It's not just the countries you mentioned, but also Australia and a few others. The U.S. is urging some countries to avoid Huawei and ZTE equipment, actually. There are other countries where this is particularly contentious. I mentioned Australia. It's a big deal in Australia. They really don't want to have the 5G infrastructure, which we all know is coming. We all know there's going to be huge investment. The amount of infrastructure in 5G is inherently many times more than you need for 4G, simply because you have to be closer to get
the micro millimeter.
That's
right. Millimeter wave. So you've got to have. It doesn't go very far.
That's right. It's not like you put a tower and then it serves everything. You're going to have them in corporate buildings. You can have them inside tunnels, everywhere. And so there's nervousness that the Chinese government could somehow use this as a spy tool.
Ready-made spy network that we're going to roll out at our expense.
Right. Well, there's two threats. There's that they might spy on companies, industrials, espionage. But the other threat is cyber warfare.
They could shut it down.
They could flip a switch and the whole thing could go down.
Yeah.
Both of those are scary. The journal doesn't say who their sources were, just U.S. officials. So we don't know if this is from the intelligence community, the Commerce Department, or the White House. And that's what concerns me a little bit, because we know that we're in a trade war with China and that the administration's policy has been very anti-China. So it's one thing if there's a technical reason for this. It's another thing if it's a political reason for this, and I don't know if it's completely clear. According to the journal, American officials met with executives of Italy's major telecom carriers to explain the risk of using Huawei and ZTE equipment. The Italian said, Yeah, we're aware of the risks, but we're going to keep on using Huawei. He said, we cannot ignore Huawei because they are a leading telecom equipment provider worldwide, and that's a very tough call. That's also very bad Italian. So this is the problem, is there's no one else. And one of the things Washington apparently wants to do is kind of promote U.S. companies to start making this gear. I don't know who that would be, and I don't know how they would make the gear anywhere but China. Not to mention the fact that that iPad you're using, the iPhone I'm carrying, that MacBook you're using, that iPad you're using, they're all made in China by American companies, but made in China. I don't know if the response is, well, let's just not use Huawei.
Shades of Supermicro, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. I talked to Huawei's director of PR, who is in Seattle, I guess probably Huawei U.S., was at an event I went to, and I asked her about this because remember the P20? Very nice Huawei phone that they were going to sell in the United States. They announced it at CES last year, and they said, we've got deals, carrier deals with Verizon and AT&T, at which point the U.S. government went to Verizon and AT&T and said, nice network you got here. It'd be a shame if anything would have happened to it, and AT&T and Verizon both dropped it. And Huawei was furious, and they pulled that you can buy this phone in any country in the world except the U.S. because they said, I asked her, she said, there's no point in trying to push a phone in the United States if you don't have a carrier deal. They just, Americans won't buy it. So we're not going to spend millions marketing the P20, which is, by the way, a very good phone, or their new one, their Mate 20, in the United States because we can't get a carrier to carry it because of the U.S. government. I said, but what about this issue? I mean, I have a P20. Should I worry that everything I say on the phone is getting sent to China? She said, it all goes through Germany.
Yeah, it's so the core of this conflict is not a Trump administration thing, and it's not a protectionist thing. It's not about protecting Apple's market share and phones or anything ridiculous like that. There is a serious concern simply because the Chinese government is very, very good, thorough and aggressive with industrial espionage. They rob the West blind of technology secrets from the military, from Boeing to Silicon Valley and so on. They're very good at it. We catch a tiny fraction of the spies that they deploy. So there's this long history of the U.S. just getting our lunch handed to us. And so this is something they feel that they can do in a big way to protect. And, of course, the geniuses in Washington who are making the most noise have no idea how 5G works or how it could be used or whatever. They just don't trust any Chinese government-affiliated company like Huawei. And that's really what's driving it. It's kind of an irrational fear, but given the history, it's rational to fear industrial espionage from China. Because it's happening right now on a wide scale.
We can thank the Chinese spy establishment for potentially restarting the American high-tech manufacturing base.
If it happens,
we just have to believe it's happening.
It doesn't have to happen.
Right? You know, it doesn't have to happen. We just have to believe that.
Well, this is the problem. The journal quotes an executive from British Telecom saying, we'd like to not use Huawei. But right now, this is it. This is what's out there. Look at their market share. I know you like graphs, Jason. Market share. Huawei's the red bar. In Asia Pacific and Europe, it's dominant. North America barely exists. Ericsson and Nokia are dominant, and that's because of U.S. So the government is doing some good. I worry that focusing on ZTE and Huawei really kind of misses the overall threat, right?
Yeah, it's a Band-Aid. The politicians want to appear to be doing something, and this is a kind of a bandwagon that's easy to jump on because it's in motion and there's a lot of noise about it, thanks to the U.S. Congress who've been talking about and doing reports about Huawei for, I don't know what, a decade, 15 years, something like that. And so it's just this kind of political theme that has been picked up in the English-speaking world and a few allies.
I hope it's not kind of chauvinistic or racist in some ways.
I don't think it is. I mean, we gladly accept so many products. I mean, we should be more concerned about some food additives and ingredients that come that are manufactured in China. Oh,
it's
organic. Oh, great. I'm glad to hear it.
We're so dependent on China at this point. They're quite dependent on us, too. I mean, it's an interdependence. Right.
Well, I mean, think about all the operating systems that are popular in China, even.
Yeah.
They are from American companies.
Yeah.
So it goes
both ways. They could quite reasonably say the same thing
about
us.
And they could be concerned that there are exploits that are known that are allowing the U.S. government to spy on what they're doing, too. I do think it works both ways, but it does feel a little bit like we all enjoyed the economic prosperity of working with China in terms of tech manufacturing. And then at some point, somebody in the intelligence industry said, oh, wait a second, they make everything in the world for networking. What if they're going to use this against us at some point?
I acknowledge the merit of that. I just feel like the worst case outcome of this would be that we only use stuff made in America. They only use stuff made in China. It'd be bad for everybody. A global economy is good for everybody. And by the way, it's good for peace because there is strong incentive not to screw with America.
But everything being made in China is not a global economy. I think what we'd the best case scenario is that this whole issue causes other countries to double down on investment in building 5G infrastructure. So that we don't end up relying on two companies in China for all this stuff.
That's what you were saying, Adam. Yeah. It's good for our...
Yeah.
If that happens, I think what people have also said about at least consumer electronics is it's not economically feasible to start building these things in the United States. It's too expensive. Nobody would buy them.
Well, if the price goes up because nobody, you know.
No, we can't. We don't have labor either, so we'll just develop our robot market to build
it's
our...
It's good for the robots.
We'll build our iPhones and...
And we'll charge them taxes as well. Yeah. I have a prediction about 5G, though, that I think you're going to be talking about on this show over the next two or three years, Leo, which is that I think there's a huge health scare coming from 5G. 5G networks are far more powerful. They have to be far closer to people's houses. In test areas in New York and elsewhere where they've rolled them out, there have been petitions gathered by local residents, one resident saying that there are 60 5G networks within 100 yards of his house or something like that. And so it's largely untested. There's been limited testing that shows that there may be some serious health effects. And we've all heard about the health effects around Wi-Fi and regular cellular networks. And they've always been a mixed bag. Yes, it damages your health. No, it doesn't. Yes, it does. No, it doesn't. And that's been going on for years and years. But 5G is a different beast altogether. It's much closer.
Just down the road a piece, your area. Banned 5G towers.
Well, okay, that's what the Wired story said, but it's not entirely true because, believe it or not, I wrote to the mayor and I said, despite Mike's giving this a balanced view, I would say despite basically there being no scientific evidence that this kind of radiation has impacts on people, they paused their process because, to Mike's other point, this is actually a huge, even if we leave the medical part aside, a logistical problem because these things need to be everywhere. And as a city, Mill Valley basically said, whoa, 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 let's hold on here because we need a plan. This isn't as easy as putting a tower somewhere and walking away. Yeah. And so, you know, there will be people who will petition local governments and say there are health effects. There are also other logistical issues.
Let's test this on poorer communities first before we move it to Mill Valley.
Now, the CDC says that millimeter wave is like much like cell phones, that it is not a health threat. Although we're starting to see studies that say maybe cell phones are a health threat.
It's been floating out there for a long time, and there's never been anything
CDC,
inclusive.
The Center for Disease Control and Prevention, the United States government, says there's no scientific evidence that provides a definitive answer to the question of cell phones causing cancer. Should people stop using cell phones?
I don't know. But again, it doesn't have to actually cause, this is back to the theme of the show so far, it doesn't actually have to be real.
If
enough people believe it will,
exactly,
and I believe that people will believe that it's a threat because they'll see it. It looks scary and there's
going to be radio.
Yeah. But we'll see them a lot more than we currently see cell towers. And it's new.
The Danish A Million Woman study found no evidence of human health risks due to millimeter wave or mobile phones. It's not the same frequency as mobile phones, or is it? It's a higher frequency, millimeter wave.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know. I think it is. That's why it has to be so close to where you are.
Anyway, I'm predicting that there's going to be a huge delay from what people think the rollout is going to be, based in part on the health, on health, widespread health concerns, petitions, lawsuits, all the stuff that delays new technologies.
That's a shame.
Right. And the carriers will deploy it somewhere and say, look at us, we're the first to have this city covered, and then the rollout will be very, very slow.
They'll be individual cities, individual corporations. The corporations will build this stuff all over the headquarters and stuff like that. It already is deployed in various places. It's going to be very uneven. But this
I remember
idea
when they rolled out these millimeter wave x-rays at airports, there was a huge ruckus about that, although they still use them, and I don't think there's any evidence that they cause... You're saying the perception. Danger.
I think it's almost certain that there'll be a lot of hysteria around this, and it's going to be. I mean, the other thing, I wrote this article about how the whole 5G thing. There's a perception about the timing of it, and that perception is way off. The health benefits are one thing, but you see all these companies saying, "Oh, we're going to be in Austin, New York City, Chicago, blah blah blah." In none of those cases are they blanketing the city with 5G coverage. You're talking about individual tiny little neighborhoods. If you have a space of just 50 feet where you don't have an antenna, you have no coverage there. And so the way the phones are going to work, and 5G phones are already coming out, is it'll just knock back. Well, it'll stay in 4G most of the time. And if you're Jason Snell and you're doing like heavy duty video stuff. And there's a connection, a 5G connection, suddenly it'll kick into 5G.
Why does he get 5G? I want 5G too.
Too bad.
But it's still floating in the air, whether you're using it or not.
You should install it in the studio.
It's 15, the chat room's saying it's 15 gigahertz. It's very high frequency. But there's so much involved in whether it causes damage to human cells, the amount of energy, the distance from the cell tower. The frequency of it. There's not been
phase
any
the moon.
Phase
all that
of the
stuff,
moon. Yeah. But there are plenty of people. We got a guy who comes in here. He's a fan of the show. He comes in here regularly with his laptop, uses our Wi-Fi, but says he's trying to get Wi-Fi out of the Petaluma City schools because it's bad for kids. And the problem, I guess, would be that if it does turn out to cause cancer, we won't know right away. Cell phones have been in widespread use for more than 20 years. I think we've seen no increase in brain cancers. In fact, I think there's a slight decrease.
I think the worst impact of Wi-Fi in schools is that the
kids
what
are
they're
playing
distraction.
Yeah.
Yeah, not the actual electromagnetic waves.
We'll talk about China a little more because, according to Bloomberg, by the end of 2020, which is just a couple of years out now, not even that much. Well, yeah, 2 years from now, China will be able to. Beijing will judge every resident based on behavior. It's the social credit system, which China has been rolling out. China's plan to judge each of its 1.3 billion people based on social behavior is moving closer. I talked to a Reuters journalist who was for 13 years bureau chief in China. She was also concerned. She said, there's always been this authoritarian, drive in China, but technology has suddenly enabled it to a degree unprecedented.
And they're really going for it.
Jack Ma,
Alibaba.
There was a quote where he said, when this rolls out, we'll never, have a problem at the square again.
No, everybody be nice.
And he meant, Tiananmen Square.
Yeah.
Because they can just see it coming and arrest everybody before there's a...
It's called totalitarianism.
Yep. It's back.
Yeah.
But the point is,
the panopticon.
Totalitarianism is now enabled in ways that it had never been able. Yeah. I mean, this is literally the panopticon. Everything that you do can potentially be seen.
Yeah, it's visible. Yeah.
That's why I installed a Facebook portal in my house.
That's a good idea. Yeah. Good thinking.
Because I figure Mark is going to be better than anybody.
It's like an episode of Black Mirror, essentially, right? It's called Nosedive. It's in season 3 of Black Mirror. You can go watch it. The idea that eventually everything you do will get you a score. Yeah. And China is implementing
episode.
It.
Yeah.
It is.
So they've been doing it in southern China. But Beijing says now they're going to pool data. This is a Bloomberg story. The capital city will pool data from several departments to reward and punish some 22 million citizens based on their actions and reputations. This is a plan posted on the Beijing municipal government's website Monday. Those with better social credit will get green channel benefits. You're in the green channel.
Mm.
While those who violate laws will find life more difficult.
That sounds more innocuous even than it is. Violate laws can mean things like mentioning Winnie the Pooh on social media.
Right.
Or, you know,
because that was what
there was a
President
meme that went
around, was being compared to Winnie the Pooh,
right?
So it's presumed if you mention Winnie the Pooh, there's a secret message.
That's right.
It's so, a dog whistle.
The laws themselves that if violated get you this low social score are themselves objectionable.
Well, what I'm concerned is that we basically have this plan already in the United States. It's called Facebook. Mm-hmm. Everybody has
yeah, but it's not run by the government.
Yes, but the minute we're at war with China,
we'll turn it on.
And the government says, hey, you know, the Chinese government has that. You know, we're the U.S. government. We need it, too, because it's a national emergency. You know, Zuck, like, hand it over.
They could.
The difference is we have an opposition political party and we have the First Amendment.
Now.
So, well, I mean, you know.
But we do have a totalitarian regime ready to be turned on at a flip of the switch.
In other words, all the tools are there.
All the tools are there. The social credit score has already been built.
I'm saying if you're a Democrat, hug a Republican and vice versa, because essentially
gotta
the law.
Band together.
It's one of the things that they are going to use this totalitarian technology dystopian system for is preventing an alternative political party from arising or people, you know, actually calling for democracy or things like that. So, be
thankful. This is used right now economically, and China's very forthright about it. Hangzhou is doing it. They've had a personal credit system. They rolled it out earlier this year. By the end of May, people with bad credit in China, according to the Chinese National Development and Reform Commission, have been blocked from booking more than 11 million flights and 4 million high-speed train trips. The Beijing project.
You get to go in the fast lane if you have a good credit score.
Yeah. Otherwise, the Beijing project will improve blacklist systems so that those deemed untrustworthy will, quote, be unable to move even a single step, according to the government's plan.
Think of human rights as if they could only be redeemed by frequent flyer miles.
Yeah.
That's basically what's going on.
Holy cow. And I think Jack Ma and Alibaba are very much in the forefront of this. A lot, for instance, Alipay has become the dominant commercial transaction method in China. People don't, you know, we're moving towards cashless societies. If everything is digital, then everything is known.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think what is behind so much of this, and you see this in the rise of authoritarianism in the West as well, is in the end, people want to be comfortable. They want, you know, food and clothing and shelter and maybe some creature mm-hmm. comforts. And what China is able to do is they have lifted so many people out of poverty mm-hmm. and into a middle class and an upper class. I believe the estimates are that the middle class in China maybe in the next few years will be the size of the entire population of the mm-hmm. United States. It's mind-boggling.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there is a willingness among a lot of people to trade that comfort and not worry about the other aspects of social control that their government might give them.
Yeah,
which I think is legit. I mean, the idea, you know, how many people has the totalitarian China saved from grinding poverty in the last 10
right.
years?
The communists have saved people from poverty by embracing capitalism and rejecting communism, but
the
social and political control of the Communist Party is still very handy.
Right, and they're saying, we're going to do with capitalism in a new way. No thank you, United States. We're going to have totalitarian capitalism, and I'm sure it will work pretty well for a while because if everybody just is heads down and doing their job because they don't want to get a bad social score, I bet it will boost their economy. Look very competitive. We'll have to read these dumb articles that say, you know, maybe the Chinese are onto something. Maybe it's impossible to have a democracy with a couple billion people. You know, this seems to be working. And then, of course, it will turn into a reign of terror.
Democracy is ugly as sin.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, but really so is Pol Pot, right?
Right.
You know,
it could get worse.
But the
streets are clean and the trains are
out. And that's
on
the
time.
Argument is as long as people are comfortable, they may be willing to forego democracy.
And by the way,
Singapore.
That seems to be the...
Exactly.
And not worry about the million Muslims that have been rounded up and put into re-education camps.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, but they're off
as long
they're
as
way
you're comfortable.
Out in the West. And we don't have to pay attention to them.
Yeah.
That's the real problem. It's very easy to, you know, hide your head.
Yeah.
Oh, wow, that was depressing. We're going to move on.
Okay.
Let's talk about Russia.
China can't be fixed, and they're a huge economic threat.
That's, it's an interesting story. I think it's, I don't know if it's clear what the answer is. Especially to this whole Huawei thing. I think that's just the tip of the iceberg. We're going to take a little break, come back with more. Adam Fisher is here, author of Valley of Genius, co-host on our Valley of Genius podcast. If you haven't heard of that yet, go to twit.tv/VOG. Mike Elgin, the digital nomad. He is, by the way, thank you for your gastronomad, lovely gastronomad
Handmade in France, and that will open any bottle.
We'll open any bottle. Unlike the last time you were here, when our cheap plastic Napa Valley wine bottle opener broke off.
Yeah, the French do not mess around with wine. That's not going to happen.
This is nice. It's even got a little knife for cutting the foil. Oh, man.
You can put it right through the side if the cork's too dense.
That's right. Just chop it out. Our show today brought to you by Stamps.com. This is that time of year when the post office is filled up with people, wonderful, happy, lovely people mailing out gifts and cards. But if you do business, if you send out invoices or brochures, if you're an Etsy seller, eBay, Amazon seller, and you do business through the post office, it may be not the happiest time of the year for you. That means lines will be longer, parking will be hard, but we got it better. I love the post office. I have a postal box. I love going there. I love saying hi to my local postal workers. But when it comes time to mail stuff, I print the stamps here with my computer, my printer, and stamps.com. Buy and print official U.S. postage for any letter, any package, any class of mail. You've already got everything you need. You don't need an expensive postage meter or fancy ink or anything. Just your computer and your printer. The mail carrier comes. He picks it up. You don't have to make a trip to the post office. You get, even though the holidays are the busiest time of the year at the post office, you don't have to worry about it. You get the job done right from your desk. It saves you money, too, by the way. You can get discounts at stamps.com that you can't get at the post office. Every once in a while, I'll get a package with 23 stamps on it because they didn't want it postage due, right? And they didn't know exactly what it was. So they put too many. You always print the exact right amount of postage every time because you get a scale, a USB scale that goes right to the stamps.com interface. They'll even suggest, they'll say, you know, this could be, you save yourself some money, send this media mail, things like that. You get discounts on postage. With all the time and money you'll save, Stamps.com is the best gift you can give yourself this holiday season. Do it right now. Go to Stamps.com. We use it for all of our mailing. You can enjoy, no typing. It fills in it will print right in an envelope, fill in your return address, your company logo. It'll take the address from your address book. If you're selling online, it'll fill out forms needed for certified mail or international mail automatically. And also, by the way, it just looks a lot more professional. You got that preprint. Everything's all printed out. It's beautiful. Enjoy the Stamps.com surface with our special offer. It's a 4-week trial, plus postage, plus the digital scale. No long-term commitment. You just go to Stamps.com, click the microphone at the top of the homepage, and enter the promo code TWIT. Stamps.com, enter TWIT in the promo code, and you're going to get a great special offer just for the... It's a little gift to you from all of us and stamps.com. I'm going to ask you, Jason, because that seems like you see these stories a lot. That Apple is backing off and producing phones, that the iPhone XR isn't selling well.
Right.
And then the weirdest story is that Apple is reportedly resuming iPhone X production because nobody's buying the XR. How credible is that?
I think it's possible, although that's a weird one.
It's the journal again.
You know, and again, I think there's something to these stories. At the same time, we saw these stories early this year where there were a lot of reports that Apple had cut back on orders from suppliers, and it meant that the iPhone X was failing.
And yeah, we see it every year.
And that was wrong. Yeah. Basically, they seem to do major orders at the beginning, and at some point they tail way off because they know they've got a peak.
This is
period.
Their response to the fact that they were selling out so fast on the first few
exactly
weeks.
Exactly right. They order
so
a huge
crank
amount.
Crank out a bunch of them. So you
they don't want to be back with
any supply.
Exactly.
And then you step down, and they did it last year, as you said.
So we can't know for sure.
Yeah.
That said, I do wonder if this is the first sign. I was going to say clear sign, but it's not clear. But it might be the first sign that Apple's strategy of dramatically increasing the average selling price of the iPhone is getting pushed back from consumers. Because if we think about the iPhone XR, that's the cheap iPhone this year.
Yeah.
And it is more expensive. It is the cost, basically, of the Plus phone a couple years ago, which was the expensive version of the two iPhones that they made available. And then above that, they've got the $999 and the $1099. So I wonder, especially in that story about putting the iPhone X back into production, if they're toying with the idea of coming in with some models with a little bit lower price tag. Could they sell an iPhone X again for $899? They chose not to do that, right? In recent years, they've taken this year's phone, and when it becomes last year's phone, they cut $100 off the price. This year, they introduced the iPhone XS. The iPhone X vanished, right? They're like, we're not going to let you buy
this
for
$899. It's not even the list, is it? Yeah.
Right?
They're still selling the iPhone 7.
Exactly.
Does anybody want the iPhone 7?
The 8 is a better deal than the 7, even though it's a little more expensive. And right now, that's the funny thing, is that your best value buys for the iPhone are probably the iPhone 8 and then maybe the XR. The XR, actually, if you're looking for a plus-size phone, that's a pretty good price.
But maybe,
it's a pretty
maybe
good
people want,
product,
they want to get rid of the home button. They want the features of the 10.
It's also
or the
possible.
XS, and the other story might be, the Wall Street Journal says, it may also be that Apple has contracts with Samsung for a certain number of OLED displays. Remember, the 10 is the first one with an OLED display. And they need to buy a certain number of panels from Samsung. And given that they're not selling the 10S or the 10S Max that well, maybe they're going to go back to making more of the 10s.
Right, and it would allow them to maybe go in with that lower price point after the initial bang of 10S sales. I mean, this is all tea leaf reading, because the Apple supply chain, you know, has contracts and it has specific issues. And how do they get these parts? And they want to make sure that they can hit their peak and not be really back ordered. So we try to understand maybe what it means, but you don't necessarily know enough to know for sure.
There's another interpretation, that nobody wants a cheaper iPhone, that everybody wants the top of the line model.
I like that one.
And Apple likes that interpretation.
If you either want the best, in which case you get one of the top of the line models from Apple and you spend a fortune for it, or you get a OnePlus. You get a OnePlus phone or something like that, and it costs $300 or whatever. But nobody wants to spend, you know, $900 for the worst iPhone. I mean, that's just, it's too much money for the thing.
That's
that
a good
is not
way
the
to
best
put
thing.
It. Yeah.
Yeah. You show off your phone and everybody's right. like, oh.
Well, I mean, I think Apple is
sold my car to buy this phone.
At the high end, I think Apple is very smart to say, hey, okay, every time we make a more expensive model, we sell it.
Sell them.
So why don't we keep doing that? And we'll still make that less expensive model available.
It's kind of made up for a drop in unit sales.
Exactly. Or it's flat, basically, in unit sales. But but Wall Street still wants to see growth. So they've stopped reporting sales figures now. Going forward, they're not going to report their sales figures, only the revenue figure. That's a little bit telling. And I do think that they're looking at money left on the table, that if somebody will buy an iPhone for $1,000 or $1,200 or $1,500, why would they not make that sale available? The question is, what happens on the low end? And I do wonder about the psychology of, like, the XR. I think it's a really good phone. I think it's a really good value. But if you're looking for a bargain, maybe you're not buying an Apple product after all.
Yeah. I also wonder if the public isn't being subtly manipulated into demand for the iPhone X, because the iPhone X, because they've been manufacturing it for a while, it gets more and more profitable over time if you don't lower the price, because you've already invested in all the infrastructure on the manufacturing side. And so that's really kind of the best phone for them to be selling from a...
But I'm looking at Apple's website. I see a 7, an 8, a 10R.
Yeah, the 10 is not currently
10S.
For sale. They took it off sale.
The 10.
So would it re-enter in certain markets? I think
maybe it's for Japan and China.
It would be a little bit weird for them to do it, but I wouldn't put it past them to say, hey, great news. People love that iPhone 10 and we're going to make it available for a special
classic.
Price. And if the margins have come down, because in the end, Apple doesn't look at these things and look at the prices. They do for marketing purposes. Mm-hmm. But in terms of what their plan, they're looking at what margin they get out of everyone they sell. And if they can make more money on an iPhone 10 sale than on a 10S sale, great.
Yep, absolutely. I'm still waiting for the iPhone 9.
I feel like that's going to be like Windows 9. Yeah. It's never going to happen.
Never going to happen.
What is it about 9?
Just skip it. It's probably unlucky in China or somewhere.
I don't know. Probably the 13th
floor. There's probably some cultural reason you would
Gotta
skip
be.
9. If the fact that Microsoft and Apple both did that, right? I don't know. I don't know.
Or maybe it means no in German.
9.
iPhone
9.
9.
9.
Don't want to lose the German market.
Speaking of the German market, Google is facing some more trouble in Europe, in Germany, in Spain. They've already through this. The Leichtsun, I can't say it. I got to get Jeff Jarvis to say it. Zeschrecht or something. It was the link tax, and it was proposed first in Germany, and it failed miserably. Then they tried it in Spain, and Spanish news organizations found such a drop-off in traffic that the problem is that publishers say when you do a Google search for a story, Google will put our headline and a snippet, a sentence or two from that story in there in the search results. And their contention is Google should pay us for that. When Germany and Spain tried, it didn't work out so well.
No, in Germany, I believe what happened was that all of the major publishers made a deal with Google to license their links for free because, in the end, they want the traffic.
They want the traffic. Yeah. In fact, there's some evidence that the snippet helps drive traffic.
Yeah, this seems like a solution to something that is not a problem, or at least that the publishers have accepted is the way the world works.
Google. They just actually spring us mad at Google.
I like what Soros said the other day, which, or maybe it was at Davos, but he basically said, oh, you know, Europe is just going to find ways to tax the big Silicon Valley firms.
That's what's happening. Yeah.
And they're going to, and it's not going to ever end, you know, and according to Soros's analysis, and he seems like a pretty smart guy, you know, this is going to hobble, you know, Fang, the Facebook, Apple.
Well, that's the question: is Google. Who gives first, Europe or the big tech giants? Who blinks?
Well, and this is the Title 11 or whatever, and there's also the other one, 13, which is the copyright issues, which Google has started an entire campaign about because that threatens YouTube.
So tell me about. So this is both part of the new European copyright law. Is that it?
Or, yeah, it's a copyright regime.
Article 11 is the link tax.
I think that's it.
And then Article 13. What does that say?
13 is basically it says you as YouTube are responsible for copyright infringement on your site. And as we know from I believe the Digital Millennium Copyright Act in the United States, there's this safe harbor provision. The idea that if they take steps to tell the users, the users are responsible, and then they need to take some steps to moderate and to flag them. And they've set up Content ID for YouTube, which patrols against copyright. It will also kick off anything that's fair use on YouTube. Well, you'll get your videos hijacked by other people who chop up your video, repost it, claim copyright on it. There are lots of flaws. But what YouTube says is that isn't even workable under this new copyright regime in the EU, that they would actually need to – I mean, what they're threatening is – pull the plug on YouTube in the EU because they can't be liable for every single act of an upload to their service of infringing content, especially since a lot of content people don't agree on who owns it. So,
but it is coming. And you know, of course, all the technologies companies are going to say there is no technological solution. It can't be done. Okay. Whether that's true or not, I don't know. But what really surprised me is I saw a lecture by Neil Ferguson, who's a historian, but importantly, a libertarian right historian. And he said, you know, regulation is coming. You know, he's a UK citizen or was until a couple weeks ago. Now he's also has USA citizenship, but he said it's coming, and what we really need to do is repeal Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act, which is this, you know, takedown.
Oh, that's the safe.
The safe harbor.
Safe harbor provision.
Safe harbor,
right.
And that's say because CDA. And you know that's.
But that's what this would do is repeal
so
safe harbor in
it,
the EU.
So when you see it coming from every political angle, a kind of leftist European
right.
angle.
Anti-corporate
and
libertarian point
and,
of view.
And the libertarian point of view, it's and,
scary.
You know, and Soros is saying it. Like
the argument to be made here is that there are lots of laws about the internet that were built because we didn't want to kill the internet when it was being born. Mm-hmm. And now it's way past being born. Mm-hmm. And we look at some of these businesses that have been built up on the lax restrictions, these kind of freebies that they were given so that they didn't die. So YouTube could exist, right?
Right.
And now we're saying, yeah, you can't skate by it like this anymore.
Right.
I do wonder how Google, I mean, because you talk to a YouTube creator and like Content ID is brutal even now. Like creators who are not giant media corporations are endlessly getting their videos demonetized. Right. Other people get the money for their ads, or they get pulled off because of things that are totally wrong. And if that's not good enough for the EU, it starts to you start to wonder, well, what is it going to be? Now, the answer is they could hire people, and they could not only hire moderators, but they could also invest in more technology there. They don't want to do that.
Imagine how many people you'd have to
they
hire.
They don't want
to
ruin
400 hours a minute are uploaded to YouTube.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't think humans could do it, right? Which would mean they would need to do more technology. Yeah. And I get the there's this part of this argument that is like, no, it's impossible. Or maybe it's possible, but we don't want to do it. Like, that's part of their argument here.
It's possible. It'd probably be very expensive.
Yeah.
The regulators don't care if there's only a limited number of media outlets feeding into these huge networks. In fact, it's probably the plan. You know, we need to limit speech so that we have a center, a political center, you know.
It this also makes Google completely vulnerable, right? Because at that, it basically is a sword of Damocles hovering over them at all times. Like, we could get you for so much copyright infringement if we wanted to at any moment.
Google's argument is it's their competitors who can't survive, the shopping sites and so forth, that can't survive anyway, who are just using this in an anti-competitive way to talk the EU into shutting us down. That there isn't really a problem here. And I think that the link tax is a good example. It is it isn't a problem, right? Google's driving traffic to these sites. There's no reason that they should be charged for use of the snippets. It's good for the sites. It's good for Google. But it's an anti-competitive wedge.
I mean, the argument would be that current business models say it's fine for everybody. But in a different business model, Google, which is one of the most successful and profitable businesses, is the one who's controlling access to media companies that have been struggling for a couple of decades now. So you could make the argument that the solution here should be that some of that money that Google makes in being the place you search for news should get kicked back to the publishers. I get what they're coming from, but that would break like how the whole business has evolved.
Exactly. But so maybe Google can't filter properly, but I bet Google could figure out a micropayment system that would work at a hundredth of a penny.
Google's publishing one sentence, maybe two, from an article to help you find the right article.
Right, so but they're also building a business around being the indispensable directory of all news. Right,
what should they start a competitor? What I mean, they're doing their job.
There's the thing that bugs me. There's a huge disconnect between the political culture in Europe and the public of Europe. The reason it's such a big problem in Europe is that the people of Europe choose Google as a voluntary choice.
It actually doesn't have a monopoly here. It does in Europe.
Exactly. Yes. The other thing is that there's a political culture in Europe where they just really like the 19th century. That was a great century. All the buildings that they convene in are all these.
It's a very
palatial,
19th century. Yeah.
And this whole internet is just a big problem, which they seem to, this is my opinion as somebody who spends a lot of time in Europe, they seem to be trying to, we haven't damaged the internet enough. It's still coming at us. We need to knock it down some more. As everybody at this table spends all day opening links, opening tabs, reading things, reading articles, try doing that in Europe. I dare you. It's the nightmare.
We noticed you use cookies every single page.
I see this. We all see this now. There's a perfect example of an EU regulation that had a complete opposite effect. It inured everybody to the notion of cookies. Now it's just like, close that.
Nobody's reading this stuff. And the other thing you're not reading is any U.S. paper. They're all the L.A. Times, every
they're
U.S.
All
paper.
Shut.
They're like, I'm sorry, the GDPR doesn't let us open this. You know, so I'm like,
so
this is nightmare.
This ties back to the Huawei story in this sense. I think the biggest risk to the world is a siloization or building walls between regions and countries so that there's a European internet, there's a Chinese internet, there's American internet, there's a European telecommunications companies, Chinese companies, American companies, and nobody buys from anybody else. That is a recipe, and I think we've seen it before, for world war and utter disaster. Yes. I don't think that's the way to go. We've been moving in towards a global system, and I think that's a good thing. Obviously, there's birthing pains. That's what we're seeing here. Mm-hmm. But a big mistake would be for countries to shut down something because it's America.
But China did that. They did the Great Firewall of China, which essentially locked out.
I don't think that's a good thing.
But it's great for China.
Is it?
Yes, because the only giant companies
there's no Amazon in China. There's Alibaba.
Exactly.
Yeah.
There's no Facebook
in China. There's no Google in China. There's Baidu.
Exactly. And those are the only companies that have kind of are significant outside of the United States.
I agree with you. It works. That's why we got to lobby against it.
If the EU wanted to have, some tech companies, well, then they do the great firewall of the EU, yeah. And I guarantee
that's
you
where
there
we're
would
headed.
Be European Google. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where we're headed, because it makes a lot of sense if you're trying to maximize the importance of your own own country, like China is doing. So if France wanted to be more relevant, they'd create a firewall, suffer a few years of information poverty, but pretty soon they'd have their own pretty
there
vital
is a French search engine.
Pretty vital yeah. search
Nobody
engine.
Uses it.
And everybody would use it, and yeah. it might be able, like these Chinese companies are now able, might be able to like go toe-to-toe with these American companies.
Yeah.
So you know, there's this Woodrow Wilson sense in which we need to be more connected to stop
yes.
world war, you know, stop world war. But and that's what I hear you saying, Leo. But you know, we're already in a kind of world cyber war right now. That's why the American government is saying don't use Chinese phones. That's why the Russian hacking scandal was such a huge deal. So this more connected means less problems idea is, I think it's crumbling. And
you
and
need to use Voila, which is the French Google. Voila. But do you really want to see a world where if you're in France, you use Voila. If you're in the U.S., you use Google. If you're in China, you use Baidu.
I mean, when because I'm in France, I read Le Monde. And when I'm in the U.K., yeah. I read The Economist. And, you know,
I can see from an economic point of view, countries might want to do
and
that.
And from an economic point of view, I mean, it's clearly more efficient to have one monopoly power or one monopoly company serve everybody. But it's also more brittle. Yeah. You know, if you want a robust worldwide system, maybe you actually want overlapping markets.
I'm probably in the minority, but I'd love to see the Minitel make a big return.
I used to have a Minitel. Somebody brought us a Minitel. This was before there was the internet. There were little terminals that were put in homes in France to replace the phone book.
Yeah.
But it ended up you could play games, you could chat. It was an early social network.
Yep.
They may have to go back to that.
Yeah. That'd be great.
So Google has a campaign that they're doing called Save Your Internet that is specifically
is
targeted
the
at
the
EU.
This is against
about
the meme ban.
Articles 11 and 13 both.
Yeah.
And one of the things that struck me that was interesting is there's very much a you wouldn't like something bad to happen to your favorite YouTubers aspect to it. If you click on the FAQ, it mentions some European-based YouTubers, including Kurtz Gesagt and CGP Grey. And it's very much like you would be sad if they disappeared from YouTube. And I thought, well, I know,
really.
I know Gray. Mm-hmm. It's like, do you know that Google's basically saying
using you,
you could lose this guy, and he could lose his entire business and livelihood if this thing passes. But that's what they're definitely trying to scare people into writing to their members of the European Parliament.
It's really not
and
that
cause
scary.
A fuss.
That's not scary.
Losing CPG
losing,
Gray?
Losing CGP Gray? Yeah. No, I would be sad because those are really good videos. But
we wouldn't even be losing him. He would be losing money. That's like...
Well, yeah, but the argument is that if you're a YouTube user in the EU, they're saying we will unplug YouTube if this happens, which I don't believe for a second.
No.
But that's what they're trying to do because they want to create a furor here to get the laws to be changed before they go into I guess they vote again in January in the European Parliament about these.
Yeah, this is not, we should point out, this directive of copyright is not a law.
Yeah, I think January they do a vote.
Apparently well supported, though, by members of the EU Parliament. So.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So download those videos now. Cache those on your hard drive.
I'm surprised that we have kind of one internet still, actually. I've been thinking that it would break up.
Do you think we're kind of in a temporary utopia, and that soon we're going to revert to the
I absolutely
days.
Do.
Oh, how sad.
It's that same little lull when I talked about how we had the laws that encouraged the internet. It's like, oh, the internet, it's fun. Let's do this.
Yeah.
And now everybody's like, oh my God, it's incredibly powerful and important. We need to own it now.
That's the argument, by the way, against net neutrality is, oh, we could have neutrality, but now that everybody's mature, we should really...
We take it over.
Take it over.
Yeah.
Yeah. Didn't Tim Wu say that in the Kill Switch? That was his whole premise was... Just as in the early days of long-distance telephony, There were, I didn't know this, but there were a lot of long distance companies in the turn of the century, last century.
Yeah.
But as soon as it became profitable, AT&T said, no, we'll take this.
Lock
take
it down.
It from here.
And then Bell Labs effectively became an arm of the government. And a built-in spy network for the intelligence services.
Read all about it in Valley of Genius, available in bookstores.
Is that cynical? No,
no.
It's a fact. It's just a fact.
Wait a minute. Okay, Bell Labs became the R&D division of Bell, right?
Right.
It was, and then how did the government take it over? I don't remember that part.
Well, whenever, so I read the history, who was the history of Bell Labs.
Yeah.
That, oh, I forget, he's an editor at Popular Mechanics who wrote it. But anyway, I read it, and it was very interesting. Every time, so AT&T was essentially granted a monopoly by the United States, Bell Labs, like when they couldn't figure out, you know, something with the bomb, they'd call up Bell Labs and get their hottest researchers to help the government figure out some top secret project. So that was one way. And then the other thing was whenever, you know, the national security apparatus needed to tap someone's phones, well, Bell Lab was right there to help, or Bell, not Bell Labs, was right there to help them.
Are you talking about Douglas Coupland? He wrote.
No. I'm talking Bell, AT&T.
And then then it became Lucent.
Well, then it was broken up by the antitrust. Yeah. You know, Tim Wu would really love that because that's the analogy he's reaching for with Google and all that. But yeah, the AT&T was in bed with the United States, and it was no secret for its,
because they're a good American company.
Exactly. Well, I mean,
in those days, and maybe even these days, if you're an American company,
exactly,
you should support America.
Yeah, play ball.
Yeah,
play ball.
You know, we're,
if the CIA comes a knocking, you say yes, sir.
And now,
come on, let's set up a room in the switch here in San Francisco.
And now Google, you know, takes the exact opposite approach. No, we don't want to cooperate with
Apple.
And Apple and everybody. No, why? Because they're global companies, right?
Yeah, right.
And they don't, you know.
They seem to cooperate pretty well with China. When China says, oh, let's move all the iCloud servers to China, they say, okay. When they say, let's censor some of those apps, we don't want no VPNs in China, okay.
Yeah, I don't trust any of them.
They're a good Chinese company. Actually, a multinational is a good company in whatever country they're operating in. The problem is when you get a conflict.
The problem is that it's the different rules in different countries.
Right.
So if you want to do something that the government, there is no U.S. government. It's lots of people who disagree with each other, and you just pick a side. You buy some lobbyists, and you win the political battle, or you muddle it, or what. In China, that's like, okay, if you don't play ball with us, you're out.
You're out.
So it's a different thing. So you either cooperate with the Chinese Communist Party or you don't do business in China. Those are the two options.
Yeah.
The book I was referring to is The Idea Factory.
Oh, I read that. Yeah. That was great.
It was good. You remember?
Yeah. What a good book. Bell Labs and the Great Age of America Innovation. And of course, Unix came out of Bell Labs. Mm-hmm. C did. I mean, it was a really fertile place. Remember the AT&T picture phone, 1964, the World's Fair? You don't remember that. I remember that.
I remember
saw
AT&T commercials where it's like, someday you'll send a fax from the beach.
You will.
That's right.
Someday.
Why would I want to do that?
That was a great. The transistor came out of Bell Labs. That's right.
Transistor. It didn't, what's the law about information?
Moore's? No, that wasn't.
No.
I don't think laws came out of Bell Labs.
Yeah. I'm going to get it off.
I think inventions
these guys
came
here.
Out of Bell Labs. And let's not forget, says Bleak, the glowing orb. I don't remember that at all. Is that the one that the president was
talking about? Yeah, they have it in Saudi Arabia now.
It's in Saudi Arabia. Mm-hmm. Claude Shannon.
Shannon's law.
Very good. You're right. Woo. That did come out.
That's right there. Dr.
Very good, Dr. Morbius.
Thank you, Doctor.
Mm-hmm. Very impressive. All right. I got to find something a little less dystopian to talk about.
Yeah, we're getting
it's
dark.
The way it is lately. I have to tell you,
it is.
Happy Thanksgiving, everyone.
Yeah, happy Thanksgiving. We'll talk about Black Friday.
Oh boy,
that's
that'll
happy
lighten the mood
in just a bit. A third of online purchases Black Friday came from phones.
Talk about people clawing each other's eyes out for a discount.
Yeah.
Well. No, things are getting better. It was almost 10 years ago that a Walmart employee was trampled at a Black Friday. Yeah. Hasn't happened lately, has it?
You can thank your iPhone for that.
That's right.
That's right.
People aren't going anymore. They're just doing it online. You can't get trampled on your iPhone. Mm-mm. Our show today brought to you by my dinner. Sunday's Blue Apron Day around the Laporte household. Blue Apron makes cooking fun by delivering fresh, seasonally inspired, pre-portioned ingredients and step-by-step recipes right to your door. Sure, you could have turkey hash tonight, but why not make something different and fresh and delicious? Whether you're looking for quick and easy meals or a full cooking experience, Blue Apron lets you choose from a range of recipe options. Every week, at least three recipes are built with your busy schedule in mind. So they're easy, they're quick. They do the meal prep even. The sauces, the spices, the ingredients all prepared. You can get rid of your grocery list. Let Blue Apron not only get the ingredients, but prep them for you and cook dinner in as little as 20 minutes. And then they have recipes for people like me who like to take our time and spend some more energy and come up with some wild stuff. I love my Blue Apron. Get out of your cooking rut and experience the joy of new recipes like smoky chicken and sweet potato bake with cheesy cornbread biscuits. Mmm! Hearty vegetable grain bowl with avocado and creamy fig dressing. They have vegetarian dishes that are to die for. You'll love them. They got meat, too. Home-style beef medallions and maple pan sauce with mashed potatoes and garlic sautéed kale. Even somebody from Toronto would like that. Hot Italian sausage pizza with roasted peppers and olives. What you do is you go to blueapron.com/twit. Check out this week's menu. Pick out your meals. You get them delivered. Your first three meals are free. blueapron.com/twit. Cajun-style spiced chicken. Oh, this looks so good. Oh, man. The thing is, I always get new ideas, new ingredients, new tips, and it's so easy, and there's no waste because you get exactly what you need to make that dish, no more, no less. blueapron.com/twit. Your first three meals are free. A Blue Apron's a better way to cook. I have to remember what we're cooking tonight. Can't remember. But I know it's fun because I get home. I'm tired after twit. I don't have to shop. I just go home. Whip out an amazing
like half
meal.
An hour.
Yeah.
Typically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it depends because they have this two different things. So some are as fast as 20 minutes, some are 40 minutes. Depends what you get, but you get to choose ahead of time.
Just mail me dinner.
It's practically that, but I like to cook them because there are services, we shall not mention their names, that they're basically TV dinners. Mm-hmm. They're done.
Yeah.
You microwave them.
I don't want to subscribe to an airline.
Yeah, like it's airline food by mail.
Right. Airlinefoodbymail.com? I bet it exists.
I bet it does, but I don't want it. This way it's fresh. Blue Apron. The house smells great. It's wonderful. All right. Did you guys look at the rundown and pick something good? How about Black Friday? Over a third of online sales on Friday were from phones. This is a big, big jump. This is a lot of this comes from Adobe. I don't know why, but Adobe Analytics, they get all the information. I don't know how. A third of online sales were on smartphones on Black Friday. That's up from 29% a year earlier. 2.1 billion in sales, a leap from the previous record, 1.4 billion, which was last Cyber Monday.
When can we retire the term Cyber Monday, right? That was before you could shop on your phone, and you had to wait till work opened because that's where the computer was
every day is
to
Cyber
do
Monday.
Your shopping, right?
That's right.
That's the point of Cyber Monday, and now it's a totally meaningless term.
And we also have to retire the word Friday because Black Friday is now begins on Thanksgiving or before.
It's Black Thursday.
In fact, Cyber Monday.
There was a huge amount of sales on Thanksgiving. People were buying on Thanksgiving. Yeah.
Even Google had a big sale starting on Thanksgiving morning.
Right. Online sales for Black Friday, 6.22 billion according to analytics, Adobe Analytics. That's up 23%. 23% growth year over year.
This kind of proves that the phone is the platform now and that all of us on computers are just dinosaurs.
Top-selling devices, laptops, streaming devices like Roku, Chromecast, and Fire TV. top-selling video games, Red Dead Redemption 2, Let's Go Pikachu, and God of War. Thanksgiving Day itself, $3.7 billion in sales. Thanksgiving Day. Eat the turkey, go shopping. That's I think that is a big shift.
Yeah.
And if you count all November, $38 billion in online sales in the month. Cyber Monday, which doesn't exist according to Adam.
I'm just saying it's an antique and should be retired.
Sales are expected to grow 17% on
CNET. CNET should retire that word.
Is it CNET that came up with that? No, I think that goes.
They're using it.
It's like, no, I think it's Adobe Analytics that says it. And then there's Giving Tuesday. And there's what you're going to buy Wednesday.
Small Business Saturday we had yesterday.
Small Business Saturday. Throw your money at me Thursday. Yeah.
What the F Wednesday?
What the F Wednesday? The one place wasn't too busy?
Sears.
This picture from a Sears store in White Plains, New York on Black Friday, the refrigerator section, absolutely empty. The inside, this is a great story from CNBC. The inside of Sears at the Galleria White Plains Mall on Black Friday. Mostly the same as it has for the past few years. Yellow tags highlighted doorbuster sales. Rows of washers and dryers stood gleaming. Sparkling Christmas ornaments were on display. But the glaring omission at 7 a.m., an hour after opening, were the shoppers. This place looks like a ghost town, noted Brandon Warkenthin, who made the trip to White Plains, to Sears and White Plains from the Bronx. That looks like a ghost. It's a waste to even come out. They're not really changing the prices.
He has a thick Bronx accent.
No, he's not. He's from the Bronx, but he came via Texas.
I see.
Okay. I can't switch gears that fast. As soon as I saw the Bronx, I realized I made a poor choice.
Who is the reporter who said, I am going to do like a
let's go to White Plains
about like the
Lauren Hirsch
Sears on Black Friday and how no one's there. I'm going to
here's a picture of
that's
the front
a genius
of the Sears stores
assignment.
Where buyers are waiting to get in. Wait a minute, there's one person, but I think she's the one taking the picture.
Yeah.
This is this is a high level.
We shouldn't gloat.
Just the kind of media craftsmanship that you know what I'm going to send a reporter to Sears on Black Friday.
Yeah, White Plains.
Yeah, Bob, you've got the sad trombone story.
Yes. You just send someone who can really
look at the craftsman tool sets just waiting to fly off the shelves. If anybody would just
they're smart, they'd advertise it as no waiting, no
crowds. No waiting, right?
No crowd. So Cyber Monday was as a phrase was invented in Thanksgiving 2005. It's that.
Yeah, again. That's how, because when the internet first started, right?
Right.
Yeah. I think Regis Philbin coined the term, actually.
That's right.
There's the Christmas tree aisle. Lauren just walked around with her camera phone trying to find shoppers.
Amazing.
Look, here's another section with no people.
Oh, my God. This actually is kind of sad. I mean,
why, are you sad to see Sears?
No.
Prices are good, though. That's a down jacket for
$10 $9. For it. It's a doorbuster.
That's pretty $10. Good.
For a down jacket.
The sale's still going on. I'll go to White Plains.
I should
get a jacket. Well, you could go to China or you could go to Sears.
But you know, it's funny because didn't Jeff Bezos this week say that someday Amazon will be fail, will go away?
Yes. And
it does. It happens. This is what happens. Sears was the Amazon of the turn of the last century.
I was in Chicago recently, and we took one of those architecture boat tours, and one of the highlights of it was this massive complex on the Chicago River that was built for Montgomery Ward, by the Montgomery Ward. And that is a fascinating story because that mail order retail dominated. Yeah. It had huge impacts in society because there were people who weren't allowed in stores, especially African Americans who could order products on the Sears or the Montgomery Ward and then later the Sears catalogs. Of course, Montgomery Ward, it's out of business. Mm-hmm. There's .com companies in all those buildings, but it's just, there's these enormous buildings built on the side of the Chicago River. Huge. It was one of the largest buildings in square footage ever built at the time.
Wow.
For a company that people below a certain age don't even know the name because it went out of business
Montgomery
in
Wards.
The
yeah,
90s,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah. My people call it Monkey Wards.
Monkey Wards, yeah, sure. And those days are over.
People of a certain age.
Yes.
Yeah, the first internet was the railroad and the post, you know.
Right.
Yeah, and then they got the rail barons and they had to do legislation to break them up, right? It's
I actually give credit to Bezos. This was at an all-hands meeting, and they asked him about Sears, and which filed for bankruptcy in October. Bezos said, look, that's going to happen to us unless we obsess over customers.
So you've got to work harder
because
we're still a startup, even though we're Amazon, so work harder.
Amazon is not too big to fail, he said. In fact, I predict one day Amazon will fail. Amazon will go bankrupt. If you look at large companies, their lifespans tend to be 30-plus years, not 100-plus years. So Sears is a great exception. It's a great success story.
Let me tell you, Amazon is not going to fail because people aren't working hard, right? It's going to fail because somebody's going to invent the thing that's better than Amazon.
Right.
Amazon won't. Right. It's the same old story, right? So this is
the matter transmitter.
Yeah.
Someone's working in it now in a garage.
For Jeff Bezos to say, you know, if you have to go to the bathroom, do you have your jar handy? Now get back to work, everybody. Come on, Jeff. Come on.
So Cards Against Humanity did a 99% off sale.
They did. They did. They've spent the last few months. I know those guys. They spent the last few months collecting a bizarre collection of products and then put them all on sale. Individual items, single items, for 99% off. So you could get like a car for $90.
Ford Fiesta. 2015. I mean, it's not the latest.
No, it's a used car.
They
had one.
$97.50. So
there's a Picasso lithograph signed.
That's right. It's an MFing car. This car's got it all. Seats, wheels, cup holders, you name it. Drive it to work or just make it go beep, beep.
Yeah. So what you had to do is you had to wait for the countdown to go down to the bottom. Then you had to click buy and you had to, as quickly as you had to fill in a CAPTCHA, as quickly as you could, get to the next screen, put in your credit card information, and basically one person would get it and everybody else would lose.
This is a great
promotion.
And
according to Max Temkin of Cards Against Humanity, they basically did a denial of service attack on every single provider they were using.
Of CAPTCHAs.
Whether it was their web service provider, Stripe, their shopping cart provider, they all got completely swamped with people trying to get the flight suit from Independence Day for $99.
Bill Pullman's actual flight suit from Independence Day, $39.95.
So I'd like to talk to some of the people who got these deals. Like, did they have little scripts that they were?
They tried.
They just got lucky.
They tried very hard to make it so that you couldn't do that. I think they just got lucky. Of course, there was the guy who posted on Reddit about 30 minutes later saying, okay, I bought 300 pounds of beans, of garbanzo beans, and my wife is going to get very mad at me when they pull up to the door. What do I do with them?
$99.99.
Yeah, it was only $80 for the beans.
If anybody wants to buy memorabilia and old stuff like that, the amazing site that I don't hear a lot of people talking about, iCollector.com.
iCollector.com.
So I go there all the time, and I just do a search for the stuff posted in the last 24 hours. It's an auction site. So they have, like, revolvers from the Old West. They have Dumbo ride elephants you can buy, like...
Oh, wow.
They have, I mean, just every conceivable thing, and every day there's, like, a theme.
How do they compete against eBay?
I have no idea, but it's the most magnificent site for random stuff.
Maybe just by focusing on whoever's providing this stuff.
Yeah. But
I will say, Cards...
So
often Cards Against Humanity does their thing as a joke, and it's always a joke, right? This time they were very smart, though. They also sold one of their own products, and it was always in stock. And it was one of their card sets, and the way they put it up there was it's regularly $2,000, but today,
$20.
I thought that was really clever of them.
Very good.
I think they just got tired of being asked, what's the deal? Why are you doing this? And their answer was, we just wanted to dig a big hole in the ground or whatever of the pranks that they've done over the years.
I love the CAPTCHAs. So they weren't normal CAPTCHAs.
No.
And if I had run up against this one, prove you're not a robot, blank, that word should have a new meaning for all of us today. What's the answer? I would not. Obviously, it's a quote from some movie.
Yeah, well,
is it Independence
I'm not even
Day?
Sure. That must be, right?
Must
you
got to
prove
right?
you're a fan. And yeah, one of them was like, if you want all these beans, you need to type, I'm a gigantic pig who wants to eat thousands of pounds of beans.
That's
and
amazing.
Then
I'm so
that.
Sad I missed this.
It's amazing.
It was pretty great.
It's not over. Deals you may have missed. A Sony 4K TV, $34.99.
Yep. And they've got all of them are these little animations.
Ooh, a 17th century halberd.
Where there's a guy in the weird orange jumpsuit thing.
Who is the genius who thought of this?
That's brilliant.
It's probably Max Temkin from Cards Against
Humanity. He's pretty cool.
Oh, and the last item that went up for bid is the suit that the guy in the orange suit wears in all the other videos. They sold that at the end, too.
Unwashed.
Poncho toilet. No. 9 cents.
$800 Applebee's gift card.
Oh, just $8. Wow. Think of all the Applebee's you'll be eating.
Yeah, there's the Picasso. I mean,
$60 for a Picasso lithograph.
That is the dumbest looking Picasso I've ever seen, by the way.
Well, that's why it was sauna. Available for
I need a portable sauna. $1.70.
I love the portable. Wow.
I love Mr. Like Orange Suit Guy.
A reverse Flowbee.
$100 bill for $1. That was a good one.
This is so clever. This is what the internet was made for.
Yeah.
See, you don't want to have this. Some Chinese internet, some French. You wouldn't see this on the French internet.
Yeah, you get your vacation to Fiji.
Yeah, luckily we don't live in France.
Oh, yeah, we get this.
Yeah, because they're in Chicago, so we get the American internet here.
Are they near Montgomery Ward's? They should take over that
building.
They're not.
They're just a stone's throw. Yeah, maybe
they
will.
That'd be pretty funny.
That's a good gag, though. I like that. I like that there's somebody out there saying, come on, Black Friday. Let's take it down a notch. Yeah. It's good to see.
Meanwhile, Amazon workers in Europe and elsewhere protested Black Friday with, "We are not robots."
We're just going to be replaced by robots if you keep this up.
Amazon's response was, we're working on it.
We're working on it. Don't worry. You just talk to us next year.
Union workers in the UK, Spain, Italy, and Germany have all staged a wave of protests and strikes against what they call Amazon's dangerous high-pressure work culture and its aggressive anti-union actions.
Good for them.
Yeah, this is a wacky story in Spain where apparently somebody involved in the Spanish warehouse that was being protested called the police and said, "Can you come and please tell them to stop protesting and get back to work?" And the Spanish police were like, "Are you kidding?" I was like, "Do you think that we're here to get your workers to go back to work again?"
Call Pinkerton.
This is Europe, man.
If you really care, call Pinkerton.
Strikes happen here.
Yeah. Strike busters since 1923. Our show today. Actually, before we do this, I want to play you a little video, since we're all in a good mood, of what happened earlier this week on Twit.
Previously on Twit.
What can you do if you simply bolt jet engines and fuel tanks onto a human being?
The new screensavers.
Dr. Grubasich, thank you for joining us. He's an aerospace engineer of Gravity Industries.
We're actually developing the world's first jet suit that can be bought, we can do it demonstrations. It is on sale in the UK at Selfridges for $400,000.
OMG.
Yeah.
Selfridges. Actually, I think they're having a Black Friday sale because it looks like it's only $373,000.
Windows Weekly.
Troy Hunt, who does HaveIBeenPwned.com, wrote a piece about passwords about 2 weeks ago in which he basically said, forget it, we're stuck with them. But I remember Bill Gates saying we wouldn't be.
It's on its way, for sure. They took a step in that direction this week. Basically, once you configure your account with, I use the key in this case, you can use that to sign into devices.
iOS Today.
This is what I've been playing this week.
Ooh.
It's called BitLife. It is a text adventure game. Right now, I'm 18 years old, and I'm going to end my life.
What?
I'm done with this life. We need to start over.
Kids, that's a permanent solution to a temporary problem. Call a counselor.
Twit. It's what's for breakfast.
I can't stop playing that game, BitLife.
School dance. It's time to go to your first school dance. You're attracted to a boy named Kendrick Coleman. What will you do? Ask Kendrick to go with me. He rejected me. Oh. Of course he did. You know why? I'm ugly and stupid.
It's so much like real life. You create a new person, and you get whatever looks or smarts. And sometimes, I've been playing it a lot. Once I got somebody really smart, really good looking, great health. He was like everything. And he got cancer and died, like in his 50s. It's tragic. It's just like real life.
Sounds like a lot of fun.
Lisa. Wow.
It's great fun.
Are you saying he's going to get cancer and die?
No, I'm just saying it's...
He's good looking. He's smart.
Mike is good looking and smart, and he's going to live to 100, I can tell.
Thank you.
I hate that about him.
Not going to play that game, I'll tell you that.
No, don't play it. It's fun, though. Our show today brought to you by Slack. This is actually almost a game that makes you more productive. It's so much fun to use Slack. I love Slack. It's a collaboration hub for work. whatever work you do. We use Slack. We moved over to Slack from HipChat. They acquired HipChat, and we moved over, and I am glad. I've been, truthfully, some of our staff has been lobbying for this for a long time. Megan and Jason, even though the corporate choice was HipChat, we're using Slack for their back channel for a long time because they prefer it. So they're very, very happy. Slack keeps the right people on your team in the loop with the information they need always at their fingertips. Better than email. It's kind of like real-time collaboration that can happen on your schedule. In fact, Slack even has a feature that says, I am off. Do not, you know, no, it will not bug you until you go back to work. I love that feature. But you can always go back and look at previous conversations, verify that you did what they told you to do or that you told them to do what you wanted them to do. You can organize conversations. And more than just conversations, you get video, you get call, you know, audio calling, video calling, integration with more than a thousand apps like Jira and Salesforce and Zendesk and Google Drive. That was a key driver for us in choosing Slack. We really had certain tools, about a dozen of them, we had to have integrated. And only Slack let us do all of that. Reduce emails, streamline your team's communication, connect the tools and services you need in one fun, easy, good-looking interface. I have to say, and you may think this is silly, but the fact that Slack looks so good has a lot to do with why it works so well, because people want to use it. They want to keep it running. And it's so no more searching through emails for that follow-up or searching through multiple systems to find the document you need. No more, you know, multiple tabs and platforms to keep updated with work. It's just one place to put everything. And, of course, they have a mobile app for iOS, for Android. They sync seamlessly. You can always pick up where you left off, no matter where you are. Stuart Butterfield and his team have created an amazing tool. Everybody uses it. You want to use this. With Slack, your team is better connected. Just go to slack.com and learn more. Slack.com. It is just so much fun. Slack, where work happens.
Say again? I'm a journalist, so.
You don't use Slack?
I'm a freelance journalist. My
company
got
nobody
is,
to talk to.
My company
you
want to
be
is
on our Slack?
Can I?
Yeah.
That'd be great.
I'll invite you. Wow. You could be part of our Slack
Mike,
team.
Mike, you're the first person I've met who is not in too many Slacks. I am in like 10.
Oh, yeah, because
I'm in the same.
And it's as a freelancer, it's how I keep in touch with, that's my water cooler with
but
other
with
people
who?
I'm working. The podcast network that I work with and the other podcast people I work with. And
I
have like
for,
a bunch of them from small groups
yeah.
that are distributed. Yeah, it's amazing.
What do you use Slack for? This is no longer the ad, so you can say anything.
I don't use Slack because I can't get, you know.
You can't type?
Billionaires that I want to talk to are not on Slack.
What? How do you get a hold of billionaires? You phone them up?
Well, it depends. If they work for Facebook, you use Facebook Messenger.
Sure.
Okay.
If they build a
Would
company.
You like to buy only slightly used Facebook portal? Only used briefly.
I was going to say there is probably a billionaire's tech billionaire Slack, and you're just not invited
to. Yeah,
that's
it.
They're all in there.
That's like Vaya, that dating site. That's what I think.
Is there a dating site for rich people?
Yeah.
But I bet you, well, I don't know. I'm not going to say anything. I was going to almost got myself in trouble. I'm not going to say anything. Amazon, speaking of billionaires, almost a trillion now. Actually, briefly, Microsoft was worth more than Apple.
I think that's an important story.
It's not just a, you know, number, you know, cool number story. There's more to say about that?
Yeah, because I think, you know, the pendulum has swung. There's a anti-Silicon Valley mood. Facebook has lost 40% of its value since the peak. There's similar numbers for Google, et cetera. But, you know, Microsoft just had this strategy of just like cranking away at kind of like, you know, they're not building driverless cars. They're making, you know, tiny little enhancements to Bing. You know, they're just doing essentially infrastructure, which is what Windows is, and keeping their heads down, and they have for the last decade. And this shows the, you know, now they're worth more than any company in Silicon Valley.
Investing in web services, which is we all focus on consumer tech so much.
True.
And it's like Microsoft is really converting so much of their business into cloud stuff.
Right. They just want to be a back end.
They just
want to be what everything else runs on, whereas Facebook, which, you know, is like wants to be a brand.
Facebook is dying.
It does seem that
Facebook
way.
Facebook
is another kind of back end.
If, you know it feels like things are going poorly for Facebook.
I remember last Thanksgiving when I was at a table with a bunch of tech people, and half the people were saying, Facebook's going down, and the other half is saying, are you kidding? I'm just buying. It's at a discount.
You know who says Facebook's going down is all of us, the people who tech community, and who said the people who love Facebook still are all the people, mom and dad and sis and bro, all the non-techies who use it to stay in touch.
Above a certain age.
But the tech people are like, oh, no one uses Facebook. I'm on Instagram. So I'm like, obviously
you haven't solved it. Don't hit the table because it sounds loud. Makes me jump.
But I am just shocked at how.
Go ahead, hit the table. That was good. I'm mad as hell.
Turn for Facebook. How low will Facebook go?
So this is, by the way, they need your help, Jason. This is from mspoweruser.com. They've made a graph in which it's almost impossible to tell who is who. The light blue is Microsoft.
Okay. They crossed,
And then the dark blue
is Apple.
But here's the thing. This really brief period in time when Apple dropped, and Apple's dropping precipitously.
The problem with stock market stuff is that you're comparing completely different companies, right? Like Amazon, we can compare the valuation of Amazon and Google and Microsoft and Apple, but they're all in different businesses. Like Apple, you could make a strong argument, has been undervalued for almost its entire existence because the market kind of doesn't understand what they do. But they're also in this period where they're hiding their phone sales and only showing their revenue, and there's some skepticism there. Microsoft has made this amazing cultural shift under Satya Nadella where they are investing in the cloud and becoming a much more kind of company that I think Wall Street can bank on. Like, they always understood Microsoft, and they kind of get where they're going, and Wall Street wants to not be surprised or confused. They like to reward understanding what your business is, and Microsoft's understandable.
Yeah, you could actually see the Satya Nadella hockey stick in that chart.
Totally.
Whereas, like, about a year after he took charge and his policies started kicking in and Ballmer was a fading memory, they started taking off.
Yeah, that guy's super smart. Also, it's interesting, I think maybe one of the last times I was on, we talked about this axis of privacy versus selling people's personal information and the unlikely bedfellows you get. Apple and Microsoft are kind of on the same side of that spectrum, right? Where they're not building businesses based on people's information. And that when we talk about regulating the tech industry and making trouble for Facebook and Google, I think if I were an observer of this industry, I would look at Microsoft and
if you were.
Well, I'm not from a financial perspective. Like, I don't care what the stock prices are. It's not my bag. But I would be noting, I guess, if I were an investor, that Microsoft and Apple might be able to skate away from some of this in a way that Facebook and Google can't.
Maybe Amazon can skate away.
I don't know what's happening.
Amazon can probably
anymore.
Skate away, and Amazon's got the cloud business. That's talking about consumers.
They're skating away,
and we focus on Microsoft's consumer business.
Leah's trying to relate
everybody
to the
focuses
Canadians.
On Amazon being the people that bring you boxes, but AWS runs like the whole internet at this point. But they're so valuable,
and the strategy seems to be like, let's just not remind everybody who we are and what we do. Let's just build the stuff that the government and everybody else runs on, and just become a utility. To be fair, Google kind of has that strategy. YouTube is the outlier. But I remember going to Google, 8 years ago, and I had just done a story about Google. No, it was 5 years ago, and it was a big cover story. And they fired the PR guy who had kind of helped me with it. And I said, look, I need to close the story. Why don't you help me? I just need a couple business figures. There was a story on Google Maps. And the PR manager said to me, we don't want to give you any figures at all. And I was like, why? It's just a simple question. They're like, we don't like to remind people that we're a company.
Wow.
This is... And I was just like, God.
What are they?
An amorphous cloud.
They just want to be a cloud,
Just there.
We just want to be a cloud.
We're a brand.
Like the air. We're all around you, but you can't see us.
Yeah, and I just was like, God, I'd love to be a PR manager for Google. Yeah. Just to sit there and be like, you want a figure about how big my company is? No.
We're not a company.
We're an Italian restaurant. We throw spaghetti against the wall to see what sticks.
That's
what we do.
That's actually very accurate.
We make clouds.
So this is a this is an interesting time because we all were talking 2 or 3 months ago about who would be the first $1 trillion company. Then Apple won that race. But it was going to be Apple, Microsoft, Amazon. And now, after the tech slump, nobody's a $1 trillion company. Yeah. And it seems like that was that a bubble? Was that a brief moment in time when tech was still king? And is it all over?
They're all moving up. I mean, you saw that.
It's just temporary.
Yeah.
Just a temporary blip.
Yeah, I mean, they're generally moving up. They're going up and down. But
here's a one-year Amazon graph. And it was going up, 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 up. Ah!
Yeah, but you'll end up ahead of at the beginning of the year, which I agree with Mike. That's the trend here. It's look, stocks are a measure
it's not a good
of the
way to
mood.
Measure
it's the mood of the collective mood of the market.
Yeah.
It's tech stocks, tech regulation gets talked about. Like on this show, everybody gets a little scared. They get out of it a little bit because it's an emotional reaction. You don't think the stock market reacts emotionally because they should all be like characters in a Michael Lewis book, but that is not the case. No. And this is a case also where people don't, a lot of investors don't understand all the dynamics of the tech market. I think there are smart tech stock analysts and smart tech investors, but there are also a lot of people who they just get spooked when somebody says we're going to regulate Facebook and kick YouTube out of Europe and they sell some stock.
And both Microsoft and Apple are kind of in the same business. They're both in the business of selling expensive things to people who have money. And unlike Google, which is in the business of just, I guess, getting everybody to use the internet and somehow getting ad dollars, pennies, from trillions of advertisers. But both Microsoft and Apple are looking for, you know, in Microsoft's case, it's corporations and, you know, and corporations always spend a lot of money. There's a lot of profitability in that. Apple's also big in corporate America. I mean, they spend a lot of stuff, but they're mostly in the business of squeezing every nickel out of the people who are the biggest spenders. And so that's a business that's just going to keep going up and up and up. And, you know, I think we mentioned that Microsoft isn't messing around with a self-driving car. I actually think Apple is. I think Apple is working on a self-driving car.
They just abandoned their car project.
They're still working on it.
Oh, they're still.
I think they abandoned the idea they were going to immediately build an entire car.
Yeah. I'm not so convinced that they've completely abandoned that either. They're working with, what is that Austrian company that does essentially, they're the Foxconn of, Dreyer or something like that. I don't remember exactly what it was. But I'm convinced, I mean, my basic logic about Apple is that iPhones are not going to take them to the next, they're not going to be able to continue growth with phones. They're not going to do it with Macs or iPads. They're certainly not going to do it with tablets. They're probably not going to do it with services unless they really go cross-platform on financial services. And I don't know where they're going to go unless they're going to have a huge, it's not going to be augmented reality glasses, although that may help. I really think self-driving cars are the next big entertainment platform. When you're in a self-driving car, you're sitting there, not driving, and so it's an opportunity for virtual reality, music, all this stuff that Apple's going to do, and they're not going to let anybody else own that.
Nolan Bushnell agrees with you, founder of Atari.
Yeah.
Are you, do you think all these companies have somebody like Xing Yi?
No, there's only one Xing Yi.
This was the guy. I wonder what Xing Yi's doing now that Verizon owns AOL. I doubt Xing Yi's still employed. David Xing Yi.
I'm sure he's a digital prophet
somewhere.
Oh, no,
he is. He's Oath's digital prophet now.
Oh, good.
This is Xing Yi, who is, by day, he says, I am Oath's digital prophet working across the globe to identify new opportunities for the business. Do you feel, though, that all these companies, Apple and everybody, need somebody like this who is just kind of thinking out of the box about what the future is going to look like? For instance, Amazon, you could almost follow the trail. Well, we sell stuff. Well, advertising. Well, wouldn't it be great if we had a captive environment where people could see our ads and shop all the time? What about a self-driving car? They'd be in a living room, and we'd be just surrounding them with ads all the time. And every time they get in the car, we'd sell $1,000 worth of goods. And then says, oh, we should be doing self-driving cars. Do you think it feels like companies are doing that. They're so desperate to know what's next.
I feel like there are MBAs that are doing the how do we crank up the revenue dial.
Yeah.
Certainly that's happening at Apple.
That's gray and prosaic.
But I think there are also, Google X or whatever they call it now, but it's the Alphabet, the big bets. Apple has a huge R&D budget that keeps ramping up, probably because of the car stuff. Mm-hmm. I think these are all symptoms of companies that know full well that you're big today, you're going to die in 20 years, And they don't want to die. They want to be immortal. And the only way to do that is to use their enormous resources today to fund all of that research so that they can find the next big thing and transform their company. Whether they're all bets, right? Yeah. Whether they hit on it.
Right.
But I do think Google, especially, like Larry and Sergey, mm-hmm. have always been obsessed with that idea of transforming right. their business down the road. And you see it. I think Apple does it and doesn't tell anybody because that's Apple's playbook. But they also want to continue to transform.
I think a lot of the spending is that nobody wants to be caught flat-footed. So let's say it all goes toward augmented reality. A company like Apple doesn't want to be like, well, we don't know anything about it. We have no engineers. We don't have any technology. So they're working on that. I mean, augmented reality is coming for sure. I mean, I don't think anybody is questioning that. But there are other things like self-driving cars. Yes, they're definitely coming, but will they be profitable? Will people buy them or rent them? Will it be like Uber? Who knows?
Yeah, and you don't want to be like Apple, I think, realize they don't want to be a metal bender. Right. That if they're going to be in that business, the bad end of that business is the company that's making the automobile.
But they want the technology. They want the staff.
And they want the data.
Do LiDAR and, yeah, exactly.
And the skills that come along with it, right? I mean, the place where Apple got caught flat-footed, really, I think more than anything else, is machine learning stuff, where Google really got way ahead of them there. And I think Apple has invested a lot of money, and we don't see all of those evidence. Just in the last year or two, we see some evidence about them starting to accelerate there. But they got caught, and they hate that, right? Like, because they've got a lot of money. They've got a huge amount of cash, and one big thing you got to do is try to hedge against these places where you could get killed. Because if you're too far behind and that next transition point, you will die.
The best bad example was how Microsoft missed the internet. I mean, Microsoft just ruled the world in the 90s, and by the mid to early 90s, they were kind of like, we don't need the internet. We have Windows in the office. We own it all. And then the internet happened. They're like, whoops, we should have really learned about this and been ahead of this.
Do you think you could get a roadmap of what a company's thinking about by looking at who they acquire? That gives you some idea. I'm looking at Apple. They acquired, I mean, it's pretty diverse. This is from Wikipedia. A chip development company, a music management platform, a music and image recognition, lenses for augmented reality, glasses, digital magazine subscription service. That's one of our sponsors, Texture, feedback platform for development teams, data science, green screen technology, tools for, I mean, that's just this year. It's really a diverse group of companies.
And sometimes, I mean, it's not always like supermarket sweep. Sometimes I think they want to hire people because they're specific tech. They're like, we should own that. Yeah. And sometimes it's, we need to learn about this. And these are the only people in the world who know about it. So we want them to hire.
In every case, it's something Apple's got to. Enough interest in to lay out some cash.
In some aspect.
Of what they see as their future.
Or they just want a technical team that can work together. And they say,
maybe
forget
that's
your idea. We just need another 100 engineers. And you guys seem to be able to stand each other.
They had a bunch of sensor tech people that they hired that is basically the front-facing camera on the iPhone X is very clearly where that went. Is they with the infrared beams.
That
and
was
being
the
able
Israeli
to,
company
yeah, exactly
that created
right.
the Kinect for
Microsoft. And then there
Microsoft.
Are some like, you know, they saw the Shortcuts app in the, or the, or what was it called, Workflow in the App Store. And they're like, I want that in Siri. And they just bought them and integrated them. And it can be, or some of these car things.
By the way, that took many years? 2 or 3 years?
It's a couple years.
So you could say, they acquired that. They must have plans, but that doesn't mean that you're going to see anything for a while.
And there are a lot of companies that you have to do a lot of detective work, and some people in the press are very good at doing the detective work, but there are totally companies that have fallen through the cracks that have been bought by Apple or Google, and you have no idea.
Well, what's amazing, we're talking about tech companies getting in the car business, but there was recently some news that the car companies were getting into the tech business, okay? So, like,
good luck with that, Ford.
Wow. Yeah, so Ben Volko, CEO of Ontomo, which is some OEM companies, told me that by 2020, bundling and selling data from connected cars will be a massive new revenue.
We know that OnStar does that today, that's a big revenue for GM. Yeah.
So they're getting into
they
the
know
Google
where you
business.
Go. Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
that is
know,
terrifying.
So like
it really
GM is going to save their ass by getting into Google.
But who's not going to do that?
Google.
If somebody has that data, who's not going to get in that business?
Well, answer is Starbucks Apple and Microsoft.
Hell yeah.
Is Starbucks going to spy on me when I'm drinking a little a latte and say, Adam, he looks
Here's
looks
my question.
Actually,
this is a question I've been asking because I got, as I mentioned, this Facebook portal, which is their video calling thing. Actually, could you bring it in here and tell you to show people? So it's actually great. It really works. Got a very good camera on.
The problem is that it's saddled by the fact that it's a Facebook product.
Yeah, people are going to be nervous that it's Facebook. Maybe, but that again is maybe just us and that everybody in the flyover states is going to say, great. Just what I always wanted.
My wife is not tuned into tech at all, and she saw the TV ad and she said, oh, hell no.
I thought those were kind of interesting. Anyway. So one thing that scared people was this idea the camera follows you around, which is dopey because the camera isn't following you around. It's not a motion camera. It's just they zoom in to a portion of the real thing to be scared of.
It simulates consciousness. It pays attention to different areas.
But it's got like a fisheye.
The real thing to be scared of, it's got a wide-angle 4K lens that can see the entire room. So, yeah, you're only seeing what it's zoomed in on. But Mark's, and by the way, I've used, and they've provided privacy built in, a 30-cent plastic clip to cover the camera.
That's a 2-cent
piece of
plastic.
Yeah, talk about an afterthought. You know, maybe people would worry about this camera. Why don't we include this in the package? It's just a little plastic thing that goes over the camera. But this is a very high-res camera. So here's my question. And it's the same thing people have talked about with Amazon's Echo and Google's Home. They're not. Mark wouldn't. There's no way Facebook would use the video on this camera. Obviously, no human is going to look at it. But would they maybe put some AI looking at it, looking for, say, books I read or clothes I wear or food I eat?
Who's in your house? What the clothes are that they're wearing, because Facebook's person recognition actually can recognize you from the back because it knows your clothes and stuff like that. Mm. There's all kinds of data that they can use. Who's paying attention?
So you think they would use that?
Absolutely.
Have you seen this picture?
Tell me where it is so I can show it. It's Mark Zuckerberg. What's he doing?
He puts tape over his laptop.
So Mark, who doesn't, in fact, let his laptop camera see what he's up to, is putting 4K cameras, or trying to, get me to pay $300 to put a 4K camera in my house.
Let's not forget a piece of plastic tape.
Well, I have Facebook, the privacy guard.
Facebook has a bad reputation that we're talking about in terms of mining all of this data in order to get information about all of us. Hey, Facebook, let's talk.
Mark wants to talk to you.
We have to also say they have a terrible track record at security.
Yeah,
and they've had lots of data breaches.
Yeah.
So that is another part of this is, okay, great. Do I trust Facebook as an information provider? Maybe, maybe not. Do I trust them technically to not get hacked? Maybe, maybe not.
Well, here's a job for Adam. To figure out what they are doing, look at what the user agreement doesn't say they're not doing, and that's what they're doing, guaranteed.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a not guaranteed.
But wouldn't
this
that
might
be illegal?
No. What I'm saying is, if the user agreement,
but you have a privacy.
If the user agreement doesn't, and all that stuff, all the mumbo jumbo that comes along with that product, if they don't say we're not watching you, they're watching you. If they don't say they're not monetizing,
they're
monetizing.
Oh, I see. What they don't say, they're
exactly.
Doing.
Right. Yes.
Assume the negative.
Exactly.
And if they update their privacy policy to remove something,
look
they're
at what
doing
yes,
that.
Yeah. Yes. So good luck with that. And I look forward to your next book.
Yeah.
Valley of Evil.
So it's not just Mark. I mean, everybody in tech paint tapes over their camera. That's kind of the default thing.
You got to do that.
And yet, I think people are putting Amazon Echo shows. There's the picture of his. This was a publicity still he did with an Instagram frame around his head. But if people looked closely at his laptop, which is a Mac, there's tape over the camera.
I think that's just amazing.
Yeah. But I think that's pretty common in Silicon Valley.
It is.
That's another thing, maybe, is there is this thought, well, we'll protect our property. Mark, who says nobody needs to be private, bought all four houses surrounding his home for millions of dollars so that he could be private.
Right.
So clearly he wants privacy, but is that the Silicon Valley point of view? Is that, well, you know, we want it, but other people don't care.
And I'm sorry. Go ahead, Adam.
I think... Well, we're clearly in a big backlash against Silicon Valley, and I think that is the perception, to get back to this perception is reality, that Silicon Valley says, oh, no privacy is okay for you, or, you know, don't look behind the curtain, it's all going to be fine, but in their personal lives, you know, whether it's putting...
They clearly care.
Yeah, whether it's putting tape over their camera lens because they know what's going on, or sending their kids to Waldorf schools, that is the story.
Right.
You know,
they've
Silicon
got
Valley
silos
has
in
different
North Dakota.
Rules. The tech elite has different rules and different standards that they apply to themselves than they applied to the rest of the world. And that's what is fueling this massive rage that I think we're just, you know, that's out there, that elected Trump.
To call back, then it sounds like Facebook's in trouble.
For a long time, I was kind of on the, let's just buy low. Like, this is just a blip. But now it just seems to the news just gets worse and worse, and the excuses look dumber and dumber. And
but where else do you go? I mean, as a big Google Plus fan, now that's dead in the water, dead social network walking. And you know, I'm casting about for the thing that I thought Google Plus was going to be back in back in 2012. I thought Google Plus would be the one network where you have lots of smart people.
Yeah.
So where do you go for that? There is literally no place where you can go where everybody's there, and you can, of course, Google Plus was never the place where everybody was there, but Facebook still has a, what I call a monopoly on everyone. Mm-hmm. They have your cousin, your old schoolmates, your former colleagues.
Facebook
they have
is the phone book.
And
you know?
And that's why people go to Facebook. Nobody has ever liked Facebook, the company.
I got to say, though, I was surprised because I, in order to use this portal, I had to I've deactivated my Facebook account. But I had to reactivate it to set up the portal, of course, and I will deactivate it. But when I looked at Facebook, I thought, this has gotten so much worse. Yeah. I'm looking at my front page. It's a sideways picture of a memory from a year ago that I couldn't care less about. You don't have, don't show the rest because I don't want to embarrass anybody. Then it's a paste. At first, I think this is a friend of mine. The last few years have taught me when it's time to leave this body, no one can stop it. I'm starting, this is a friend of mine. And then I read, after that, copy this message on your wall. And she's copied it. In fact, her post immediately after, I'm not sure if I did this copy your wall thing right. There are all these cyber verbs that baffle me. So somebody has posted something. Somebody else wrote, okay, nice. Then there's an ad for VMware Fusion, useful. Then there's a big announcement about the Affordable Care Act enrollment period that I couldn't care less. Then there's a picture from Axios about with a kid starving in Yemen. Then there's finally somebody I know and care about, Andy Inako, who's posted his picture of
leftover turkey.
Yeah,
that's what I want to
this
read.
Is not
it's garbage
attractive content.
But maybe social media just is a natural thing that goes in waves, like it's kind of gaming where there's always a new one because the kids are into a new thing. Unlike what we're assuming, like, oh, there just has to be one.
I'm going to predict something.
Okay.
I think we're going to get a social, not merely a Silicon Valley backlash, a social media backlash. Oh, I think people are starting to realize that social media is not making them happy. It's not making them well.
Yeah.
It's not good for us. And people are going to, kids especially, are going to drop out of it.
It's already happening, I think. And but you're right about generational stratifications. Like Instagram is younger than Facebook. Snapchat is younger than Instagram. There is presumably something underneath Snapchat that will happen that I'm not aware of yet because my youngest is 13. So, but it's going to happen. And Facebook's going to be replaced not by another Facebook, but by whatever replaces it. I will say sometimes.
It ain't gonna be, by the way, what was the name of the Instagram video feed? That was a flop. Remember that?
Right. IGTV.
IGTV. Yeah. It ain't going to be that.
Yeah,
nice try.
So I do wonder, the big question whenever any of us sitting at this table try to predict the future is, are we predicting the future because as tech people, we see what's coming? Or are we in the tech bubble and we've missed what's coming? And that it's very hard to tell the difference. But my gut feeling is, to call it back to our previous sponsor on this episode, that private networking like Slack, where you can choose people you know and throw them in a room and let them talk to each other, and you get off of sort of like the broader public of Twitter and Facebook, is more appealing to the people I know. And so many people I know don't share on Twitter anymore, and they all just go into Slack.
What about real conversations with people who are sitting across from you? Stuff
on, Leo. Ridiculous.
Well, that's great if those people are nearby.
Have we found that it's so valuable to be able to talk to people geographically distributed that we're going to put up with the kind of shallow experience and the negatives that go along with that, misunderstandings and things like that go along with that? Or why not just, aren't there enough people around you in physical space to keep you entertained? Or maybe not.
I think that's the secret to the internet, is that you find that there are lots of other people like you. They're just not next to you.
With like interests, so they're not next to you.
Yeah.
The thing that social media gives us is that we can make a connection with somebody and retain a connection. It's not a great connection, but it's a connection. I travel all over the world.
Right.
We live in one country and another country and another country and another country. And social media is the only way that we stay in touch. I get to see what they're having for dinner, what they're doing, what they're traveling, blah, blah, blah. And I feel good about that.
But you did say something important.
It's not a great connection.
There's a lot
of better than nothing.
There's a lot of errors in that connection. Misunderstandings, misinterpretations. I look at Facegram. I see the kids on the Facegram, and they're really promoting a life they're not actually leading.
It's BS.
I see a lot of that, and it doesn't make me feel good. I don't know if I see. I know you don't do that, Mike, but that's only because I know you for real.
Yeah.
It's a kind of
social proprioception. I think there's so much error introduced in that feed that it's actually maybe not healthy.
I'm on Mike's side. You know, I remember quitting my job and moving across the country, and the only way I knew what all my friends were doing is because of the social networks. I locked myself in a room for literally 4 years, and the only way I had any connection with my friends or could do that to write this book was because of the social media. And I agree, all the flaws are there.
Did you see the influencers story?
Micro-influencers?
Yeah, was it New York Times? I think it was. My friend, I hope I'm not giving away a confidence here. My friend...
A penthouse made for Instagram.
No, that's a good story too, but there's one more recent, I'll find it, this week. But my friend Trey Ratcliffe, the photographer, who made his bones on Google+ and Facebook... has turned, and he's writing a book now about how social media is harmful.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that that's not unusual. I think there are a lot of people like us, like me and Trey. Well,
it's a Roger McNamee that wanna, you know.
Well, he hated Google from day one. He's
got
but
he was an early investor in Facebook. I don't know how
it's
early.
Good money.
But he made a lot of money on it, and he just came out with a book, Zucked, you know, the education of an unlikely activist.
Yeah.
I mean, when Silicon Valley itself, and of course, you know, itself is turning.
But here's what I think is happening in social media. I think there is a general slow decline in Facebook among certain types of people, and that will damage it. The biggest damage will come from companies, corporations who get sickened by the games that Facebook plays with the, you know, when they post something, 1% get it or something like that.
Oh,
if they pay a lot
God.
Of money, it's a few more percent. That's BS. And so corporations, they're in trouble there. With Twitter, I think that it'll always be a bastion for journalists and a lot of celebrities, and everybody else is kind of souring on it. But Instagram is interesting. I feel like Instagram is kind of ascendant right now. But what's happening, interestingly, with Instagram is that people are getting fed up with the BS on Instagram. So I see a shift, actually, on Instagram where people are posting kind of realer stuff and kind of unfollowing the phony baloney, look at my beautiful life stuff a little bit. And so I really think Instagram has a great future.
Except for the fact that if Facebook declines too much, Facebook as a corporation is going to have to change Instagram because they own it to be more like Facebook, right? Yeah, That's the danger. Because I agree with
you. Why do they have to do that?
Well, I mean, at some point, if Facebook declines, they got to make their money somewhere.
Why don't they just change their name to Instagram? And
yeah, but they're going to have to wreck the product.
Facegram.
Presumably, it is not as monetized as it would need to be to replace Facebook.
I see what you're, well, I mean, it maybe... I don't know. I agree. All my friends are on Instagram. Yeah. Instagram's the one that
I dropped it too.
There's still some pleasure, but it seems like it's turning junky too. You know, it's
like
here's the article. It's turning into
Paris
a soft
Martineau.
Porn.
This is Wired magazine. Inside the pricey ward, influence your Instagram feed. She talks about a woman named Sahara Lottie who started a lash extension company, Lashify, in 2017. Her investors said, if you want to succeed, quality doesn't matter. Customer satisfaction doesn't matter. Only influencers. She was told to expect to shell out $50,000 to $70,000 per influencer just to make her company's name known. Now, this is in a particular category, lash extensions, but makeup, that kind of thing. There was no way around it. That's just how things worked. At the time, Lottie found the suggestion absurd, bordering on offensive. She thought paying some random person on the internet tens of thousands of dollars just because they had a lot of followers was beneath her. So she brushed off the suggestion. Looking back now, a year later, Lottie realizes how horribly naive she was. She may have avoided forking over cash, sure, but she ended up paying for her decision nevertheless. These people, social media influencers, charging $60,000 for one video review, which, by the way, violates FTC rules by not saying it's an ad,
right?
$85,000 to publicly disparage a competitor's product. Influencers with a sizable following rarely have to purchase products in their niche. Makeup, clothing, plants, books, you name it, all come free, often delivered to the influencer's home or office in a highly Instagrammable box.
It's funny that Wired is writing about this because I worked at Wired and we got everything free.
You know, I actually got off that train by insulting everybody I knew, and now nobody sends me anything.
Nobody sends you anything.
Yeah. But actually,
Are you sure?
I sent this article to Lisa. I said, you know, we've got to reposition our advertising as influence.
Yes.
Yeah.
We're influencers. We could charge four times more. Sanders Kennedy, a popular YouTuber with over 200,000 subscribers, was once offered a couple of $1,000s to leave a particular beverage on his desk while filming. He doesn't recall the brand, but says a representative told him he only needed to make sure the drink appeared within the frame to get his paycheck.
And therein is the key to understanding Instagram and both its success and its nauseating qualities. Is that not exactly what happens on television? If you tune into a morning show, there's a big cup that has like, you know, it's a branded thing and they paid a fortune for it. It's exactly the same.
Product placement.
But the reason Instagram is escaping a lot of the problems of Twitter and Facebook is that it's unbelievably frivolous. There's no place on Instagram to influence an election, for example.
Right.
There's no place for, you know, racist
and
trolls
that's why
or whatever.
We like it.
The comments are all vacuous as can be. Yeah. The posts are just irrelevant. It's the new television.
Yeah.
And I think that's why it's ascendant.
I think you're right. And I think, you know, when we talk about influencers, the tech companies in Silicon Valley are the new kind of, you know, they're finding ways to better extract rents now, okay? It's no longer, think about them as innovative, but really they're just,
YouTube in 2016 bought a company called FameBit. Are you familiar with FameBit?
No.
FameBit is an influencer's auction site.
Wow.
YouTube owns this. Through FameBit, YouTube has partnered with over 9,000 brands and countless influencers generating revenue from each deal. YouTube is actually encouraging this. Here's one. Feminine hygiene tips video. Looking for the perfect influencer. Up to $10,000. At Nutriblast, so that's the name of the product, campaign goals, target. If you're a YouTuber and you think you're right for this, you make a bid.
I applied for that. They didn't.
They didn't want that. No. Uh-huh. This is YouTube owns this and promotes it.
Incredible.
I figure Instagram probably does something similar. FameBit posts reviewed by Wired touted potential earnings of up to $20,000 for what appeared to be a single review or video.
I tell you, the influencer thing does not bother me on its face if they disclose it and the audience understands.
Yeah, but it makes me not want to use Facebook or Instagram because it's just loaded with that crap.
Well,
right?
the problem
I guess you don't have to follow these people.
Yeah. Right. The problem with it is it's almost impossible nowadays to get a following like that. The way to get a huge following on a place like Instagram or YouTube is start like 5, 10 years ago and do everything right.
And or take off your clothes.
Time or be famous somewhere else. Yeah. And then
if I took off my clothes, I don't think that would
work. Well, yeah, not you.
Yeah, thanks.
Not me either. None of us could ever have a big Instagram following.
It's a big tent out there. You never know. But anyway, it's very, very difficult for somebody starting out today to get a huge following on Instagram, even if they take their clothes off. Well, maybe if they take their clothes off. You should try it, Jason. I don't know.
Yeah, there's machine learning to block those pictures.
Okay, I see. Okay. But yeah, the influencer economy, I mean, there was another article out there about micro-influencers. The new target is not people with huge followings, but medium-sized followings.
Right. And so, because they're cheaper.
I'm going to be a micro-influencer.
But you get 1,000 people who each have 10,000 followers or something like that instead of the one person who has a million.
Yeah. And that's like Google text ads.
Yes.
AdSense for social media ads, right? Where it's what I don't need to buy at a big brand anymore.
Right.
I can just buy a huge raft of people who fit a kind of profile and their followers will see it.
Yep.
So anybody wants to influence their following will get a free copy of Valley of Genius. So
just that's right.
Go.
There you go. Read the Wired article because it's very sad what happens to Lashify. She gets attacked by somebody who's paid to attack her on YouTube and it hurts her badly. And then there's a feud. It's actually a dramatic story that should be a mini series. Mm-hmm. Fortunately, Lashify survived the whole thing. And by the way, the author's sister has been paid for promotional posts on Instagram. But that's the entry into the story, right?
That's the source.
She talked to her at Thanksgiving, and she said, "Hey, that's interesting.
I got a story for you.
Let's take a break. Final words." We're going to wrap this up in just a little bit. What a great panel. Jason Snell, sixcolors.com and comparable.com. Many, many podcasts on relay.fm.
Uncountable podcasts.
Uncountable, incomparable podcasts.
Yes.
And many other.
It's great to be on reverse, somebody else's show.
Reverse superlatives. Is that a reverse superlative if you're incomparable and uncountable?
I think the idea is that one, you are so wonderful that you cannot be compared. Yeah. But you know,
I'm going to call that a reverse superlative. I've just invented that.
That could be the name of a podcast.
The reverse. Yes. Everything could be the name of a podcast, by the way, I've discovered. Thank you for being here, Jason. It's great to have you. You survived the smoke.
Yeah, and it's all cleared out now.
Breathing fresh air once again. Adam Fisher, he is the author of Valley of Genius, a great book. You can get it on Amazon right now. It's interviews with the people, the hackers, the myths, the legends, and some surprising names that maybe you haven't heard of that made Silicon Valley what it is today. And of course, he's my co-host on the Valley of Genius podcast. He's very kindly provided us with a lot of these interviews, and it's fascinating at twit.tv/VOG. And Mr. Mike Elgin, he's a gastro-nomad, travels the world in search of great food, wine, and conviviality.
That's right, gastronomad.net. We're doing Mexico City. We got enough people, but if we get a Twit Army person, couple, we did this before, I don't know if I told you this, before Provence. We said, okay, we'll squeeze in a Twit Army member, and we got a couple.
I think every one of your events should have a couple from the Twit Army.
I think you're right. So if somebody listening to this wants to join our Mexico event, we'll squeeze you in.
I
want to
go.
There you go. You're in the Twit Army. You're the general.
I don't know if I can get away for New Year's Eve. It would be so much fun.
Oh, Mezcal.
It's my, I kind of like my dream to do that. It sounds like so much fun.
Well, you're always welcome.
Thank you. Gastronomad.net. Go to the experiences tab. But don't delay. That will fill soon. Our show today brought to you by Betterment. It's the smart way to manage your money. It's the largest independent online financial advisor. Now, I'm going to tell you why this is really a great way to go. They're designed to help customers build wealth, plan for retirement, achieve financial goals. You need to be saving. Everyone knows that, and you need to be investing. But you've got to do it right. When, for instance, when the stock market goes down, that's an opportunity not merely to buy, but also to do tax loss harvesting, a tax-efficient investing strategy that's complicated, but that's why you have Betterment on your side. They provide unlimited expert advice designed to help you make smart financial decisions. And I want to point this out. It's very important. They're a fiduciary. That's a long, complicated word that means they have to represent you. They're not incentivized to sell funds. They don't have their own investment products to sell. They make recommendations in your best interest. The other thing I love about Betterment, there are no hidden costs, no fees. Betterment is able to trade on your behalf daily, hourly, month, by the minute, which sometimes is necessary for tax loss harvesting, but there's no transaction fees. No matter how much money you have to invest, no matter who you are, you get everything from one low, and I mean low, transparent management fee. No additional fees, and that is a big deal today because fees will chip away at your growth. Betterment gives you constant access to information, tools that allow you to track progress towards your goals. They've got an amazing app that, by the way, you can talk to your investment advisor through the app. See, people like me, I don't want to talk to them on the phone. I want to text and I want
to ask. Wants to talk to people.
I don't want to talk to people. Either way, you want to talk to some there, and there are lots of people like my mom. She wants to talk to somebody on the phone. She wants them to come to her house. Betterment. Feel like a smart, savvy investor. Now, I would always say this, investment involves risk. There's nothing perfect. Our listeners can get, especially now when the stock market's, you know, volatile, our listeners can get up to 1 year managed free. Find out more at betterment.com/twit. Betterment.com/twit. Betterment, outsmart, average. Don't get me started on my mom's investment advice. Oh, boy. He's such a nice guy. He has an MBA. That's what she said.
Oh, my.
Because I was doing it for her, right? I was helping. I said, Mom, you don't need to do all this. We'll make it very simple. She said, no, but you don't have an MBA. I said, oh, God. He came to the house. He sat in the living room with me. He talked to me. He was nice. I don't want to even ask because one of the things we had her in mutual funds nicely. One of the things he did is he went out and he bought her stock in Coke and Apple about 6 months ago. Like that wouldn't be a bad move. And
what could be wrong?
What could possibly
You can buy sugar water and go with Apple and change the world.
Yeah, kind of.
Is her friend John Scully?
Yeah, really? let's see. Amazon, I was going to talk about this. We were talking about what companies buy and what it tells you about them. Disney, when they bought Fox, Disney owns ESPN, was told they had to diversify a bunch of sports channels, 22 regional sports channels. Amazon wants to buy them. They're bidding on them right now. 22 channels, including the YES Network in New York. That's the Yankees network. Broadcasting games for 40 teams from Major League Baseball, the NBA, NHL. This is interesting because Amazon already has a deal to stream Thursday Night Football. I haven't watched it on Amazon. I watch it on Real TV. What is real
TV? It's literally just rebroadcasting the NFL Network version.
But they did all right. Last year, with the same deal, got them 18 million total viewers in 224 countries. Cost them $130 million. What is Amazon? Do they want to get into broadcast, or what is the larger goal here?
I mean, but I think they're interested in... I think all these streaming services are wondering, is there a future in live sports on streaming? Because right now live sports is seen as the bastion of the last bastion of traditional broadcast and over the top even versus a streaming service.
ESPN is the most expensive cable channel.
So what I would guess is that they will be outbid because the livelihood of cable companies depends on these things being on cable. Otherwise, everybody will divest of the bundle. At the same time, Amazon's got lots of money. They could spend it. And
if Jeff wants it, you can't outbid Amazon.
The challenges are that the RSNs do have cable deals, right? So they probably, even if they buy these channels, they may have to hold on to them for years before they could potentially like pull them off of cable and just make them on Amazon.
That was the issue with Tech TV. There were limits on what we could stream because we're a cable channel and cable wants you to watch cable, cable.
But they're experimenting with this, and I see why, because like live sports is one of those things that people who want to see it are going to see it, and they will pay for cable just to get their live sports.
Yeah. You know, when I was doing the book, I interviewed Jeff Skoll, who was the kind of first CEO of eBay, but then famously went down to Hollywood and now is producing, you know, Oscar nominations, basically. And he, at the end of the interview, he was just, he just said, it's just a matter of time before Silicon Valley just owns LA, owns every broadcast, anything. And I just see this as another step in that direction because, as you said, you know, no one can outbid Amazon or hell, Twitter. I think would be, you know, if they bought a live TV type of stuff would be a smart move.
You're basically saying if you're a fan of this baseball or basketball team that's on this regional sports network and you want to watch most of their games, what you're going to do is just get Prime.
Yeah.
Or whatever, and or Facebook or
it's
Twitter
Netflix
or whatever.
Or it's
And that you get it. But without it, eventually you won't get it.
Yeah. There's no loyalty to the cable networks per se.
Oh God, no. There's nothing but enmity.
It's just team loyalty.
I like the Yankees. Now here's another interesting thing. We were watching football on Thanksgiving and somebody said, you know, it's really frustrating because the network's cut away from the thing I want to see to show, you know, the celebration dance, or I want to see the larger game so I can see the play, but instead they're focusing on the quarterback. And I said, I don't think it's going to be long before you get to choose the shot.
ESPN's already experimenting with that, and that part of that is that they have multiple cable channels, right? They have
ESPN no good too, on cable.
So for the I think it was college football championship game or something like that. They did a big game where they did everything was. Like you could get the version of it that was on ESPN that had the regular announcers and the version on ESPN2 that had the coaches who were analyzing
much
it
more interesting.
And they had an all 12 or all 24 view, I guess, or all, I guess, no, 22, 12, 11,
well,
11 guys
on
that
zone,
where it's just the whole, you can see all the players and they're just every channel had it. 'Cause they figured nobody is going to be watching those channels on the night of the college football championship game. But I kind of feel like we are on the precipice, and on streaming you could easily do
that. What Amazon's
could do. NFL broadcasts have an alternate broadcast that's paid by Amazon that does play by play that's separate from the network version that they've thrown phone in there. So you could have alternate audio streams, alternate video streams. We're perilously close, but it's already being experimented on. The World Series, or one of the baseball playoff games, ESPN had two broadcasts, and it was literally the same broadcast, but one of them had different announcers. And they had the sort of stats-oriented and the kind of old jocks-oriented version. Stats-oriented version was amazing, by the way. A way better version. I think ESPN may have watched that and said, say, maybe we should change...
Sabermetrics
maybe
version.
We should change how we do our broadcasting. Wow. But they didn't have to make fans choose. They got to watch either one.
I think that's something that streaming can bring to the table that a cable just can't do very well.
Unless you happen to have five channels floating around.
And you're willing to give them all five up.
Exactly.
But Amazon, there's basically
infinite
unlimited number of channels. Yeah,
infinite versions. I mean, what if you could do your version of the Super Bowl?
Imagine
right?
a Twitch
you know?
Where people are streaming the Super Bowl with their commentary.
Right? Yeah.
Who owns Twitch? I forgot. Oh, Amazon.
Yeah, Amazon. It's amazing. Right? Imagine if you're in your Twitch control panel and you have access to all the cameras and you can run your own.
I switch my own Super Bowl.
And you just make that out there.
And it's
legal because you've got their ads in it.
Yeah. I
think that's going to happen.
Super cool.
I don't know why they want to buy the regional sports networks.
You think it's going to happen?
Yes.
Eventually,
totally.
Eventually, sure. But the thing is, the sports, to go back to what I was saying at the beginning, sports rights so valuable because they're this last bulwark against everybody cutting the cord. Yeah. Like the Dodgers sold their rights to Time Warner Cable in LA for like 20 years for tens of billions of dollars. And that's the challenge in all of this is it's not the technology advancement that's going to prevent this from happening. It's the contracts.
It's the lawyers.
The money and the contracts. Because a lot of these regional sports networks have 20-year rights deals, 30-year rights deals. And because they knew this day was coming.
You know who doesn't have all those rights deals? Esports. Fortnite.
It's true. MMA and a lot of fighting
MMA.
Stuff is going to streaming now because they don't have the long-term rights.
Baseball, football, and basketball, better be careful because they could actually put themselves out of business by holding on too tight.
Baseball has done a pretty good job of, Disney bought their streaming service technology because it was so good.
Right.
But you're right. They are all risking because the next generation of people is not going to be using cable to watch whatever thing that they're a fan
That's
of.
Right.
So if they're not present on modern streaming services, that generation of fans will be gone.
Baseball already is for old people, you know. Football,
making
you
friends
know,
everywhere he goes. Adam Fisher, ladies
it's
and gentlemen.
True. The only buddy.
No,
people
I
really
feel,
like.
No, Jason not, and I are baseball
it's,
fans.
Yeah,
so
and it's not entirely
out.
True. If you look at the financials of baseball, baseball's actually. Everybody always says baseball is dying, but baseball actually makes a lot of money.
Well, how about football and this, head injury problem
that's a big
they
problem
have?
For football.
I mean, you know,
I don't
with,
think football's,
with no
I think it's
no
more
mom
trouble
is going to let their kid play Pop Warner unless they're
for sure
Texas, I guess. I don't know. I could see, you know, sports being something.
I can
of
see
the
Mike
past.
Elgin glazing over because he has.
Sport,
I
avoid
sports. Like most geeks, has no interest in handball.
But,
I don't
but
understand the sports ball.
The sports stuff is changing for sure. I mean, this morning
so
I was watching. I turned on the TV this morning and there were live broadcasts of the English Premier League. The Bundesliga in Germany and Serie A from Italy. And it's like American sports channels are now bidding for the rights
to soccer.
For European soccer.
Yeah.
Part of that.
Why?
Part of it is because there are people who like soccer, Leo. I know some of us do like soccer, believe it or not.
Is it a growing Latino community? I know there's a lot,
that's part of it, but there's also the Americans are used to watching the best in the world, and in soccer, the best in the world don't play. Sorry, MLS, don't play in America. And so they do play in Europe, and they've made those sales. But what's interesting to me about it trend-wise is just that is not a sport that was really on anyone's radar in the U.S., and yet there is a huge investment and some growth in it because
it's a terrible TV sport. I'm sorry.
It can be good and it can be
slow.
Bad.
A little slow.
Well,
anyway.
It's also there's nowhere to put commercials.
Well, but they've somehow the English Premier League has managed to
survive
billions and billions of pounds despite
I know, it blows
that.
Me away what these guys make. It blows me away.
So anyway, I think sports will always be with us, but the nature of them may change. And maybe esports is the future. My son does nothing but watch people play video games on YouTube. So
Think about the generation growing up. I mean, you're going to watch Fortnite is very engaging. To watch people play Fortnite is actually as much fun. And there's no head injuries. There might be Cheeto overdoses, but there's no head.
Yeah, that's you pull a hamstring getting out of the chair at the end.
Oi! ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being here this week. It has been a lot of fun. Mike Elgin, when do you hit the road?
about a week, we go back to Mexico City, and which, by the way, is just the most wonderful city.
It's a big absolutely. City. How's the air quality, though?
It was a lot better than California was while I was there recently. But it's much, much better. The e-bikes and the e-scooters have completely taken over the city. The city's very friendly for bicycling now. Every Sunday, they close half the roads.
Oh, I wish they would do that here. Ride bike.
Yeah, it's really...
I've become an e-bike fanatic. Yeah. I love riding e-bikes. It's so much fun.
Yeah.
And how the world would change dramatically.
Yep. It really would. And so yeah, Mexico City is a fantastic foodie city. That's where we're doing the Gastronomad experience there. Right. And it's great.
Gastronomad.net. Last chance for one lucky twit couple to enjoy New Year's Eve in Mexico City.
Tell them what they win, Leo.
You've won a free wine bottle opener. Mr. Adam Fisher, you are so much fun. We love doing Valley of Genius with you. Everybody should go to twit.tv/VOG. That's the podcast. Subscribe. We just recorded a bunch more to come.
I think they should buy the book, too. What do you think?
Let's not go crazy. Yeah. No, of course, if you like the show, you'll love the book. The book has it all. And it's nicely put together, too, by this guy right here, Adam Fisher, Valley of Genius, the uncensored history of Silicon Valley, as told by the hackers and the geeks who made it happen. It's really fun.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Adam. It's great to have you on.
Thank you.
Come back soon.
Yeah.
In the TV version of this show, Adam Fisher will be played by Charlie Day from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. And thank you, Senor Gravy.
I like fantasy casting.
Yeah, fantasy casting. It's Who's going to play Jason Snell?
I
think Bradley Cooper as Jason Snell.
Yeah, let's go with that. Sounds great. I'll take it.
SixColors.com. You know what? I didn't give everybody's Twitter handle. You're Jay Snell.
Jay Snell.
Adam, you're...
Adam C. Fisher.
Adam C. Fisher, because that other Adam Fisher took it.
Took it.
Mike Elgin, you're...
Mike Elgin.
Mike Elgin.
Nice.
I'm not on Twitter. Thank you.
Wow.
I know. Social How many media. People do you know had 600,000 Twitter followers and threw it all away?
You could have been an influencer.
For true love. Yeah. I could have been an influencer. Instead, I'm nothing. We do Twit every Sunday afternoon, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 2300 UTC. You can watch us live. We're back on YouTube live. Thank you, Apple, for not suing us at Twit. I don't know what happened with there. Apple, you knew this, right, Jason? Apple took us down. We were streaming the event.
Oh, interesting.
Apple took us off YouTube Live. We got a strike. YouTube Live, you have to first fight it and then wait for the other company to respond. It was some lawyer in San Francisco working on Apple's behalf. He never responded. So 16 days without YouTube Live, we finally got it back.
Oof.
But now there's a chilling effect. I don't know what I'm going to do next time. I'm thinking we're working on a Tim Cook puppet.
And there, yeah, let's and do there, the whole thing with
that's
puppets.
That's that argument about fair use, right? That
it was fair use as far as I'm concerned.
But Content ID nailed you, yeah.
But I don't know if it's
Apple,
Content
Apple
ID.
Specifically
I think
said
it was Apple
cease and
nailed
desist.
Us. Yeah,
interesting.
They don't like me. I don't know why.
Interpretive dance. Do like the whole event with interpretive dance.
You spent much money on Apple. Interpretive dance. That would be good.
Yeah.
This
wear red leotards.
Is the thinnest iPad you have ever seen.
See? Obviously, this is the way to go.
It's going to work.
If you do watch live, you really want to be able to comment on the Facegram at irc.twit.tv. That is our live chat room that's going on with all the people watching live together. You can also watch on demand anytime. All of our shows are at twit.tv, both audio and video for your delectation. May I make a recommendation, sir? You might want to subscribe. Pick your favorite podcast app. Subscribe to This Week in Tech, and you'll never miss an episode.
Subscribe to all of them. That's what I do. I get the whole, what is it called? The
Radio Leo? There's actually a Twit All feed, right?
There's an All Twit All feed. That's if you.
That's too much. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Subscribe to the audio and all three videos. That way you'll have your choice. But the good news is subscribing doesn't cost you anything. You don't have to listen to them all.
Sure you do.
Would be nice if you did, but you don't have to. So that way you're never like, oh gosh, I've run out of Twit shows. Like that would ever happen.
Yeah.
Right. Subscribe to all. Thank you, everybody, for being here. Well, and thank you to our studio audience. If you want to be live in the studio, we'd love to have studio audience members. All you have to do is email tickets@twit.tv. Alex and Chris were here. Chris is from Toronto. Alex from San Francisco. They're both big, fat geeks. And also Brian visiting from...
They're quite slim, actually.
Leo. Actually, they're not big or fat, but they are geeks from Coronado, right? No. Say again?
Altadena.
Altadena. Uh-huh. Ah, the beautiful Altadena, California. Thank you for being here. If you want me to mock you in person, just email tickets.
Tickets are free.
Twit.tv. Tickets are free.
Mockery is extra.
No, that's free too. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time. Another twit is in the can. Bye-bye.